It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 11th day of March, 2024. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. That's where you can go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Ha-ha, see what I did there? 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. For those of you listening live, well, if you jump into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, and that would be Squeaky and Theo. Hey, gang.
There's only two. I don't think two can be a gang.
And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin, and this is the second full week of March. We begin just a couple of moments ago. Don't go away mad, Theo. Doggone it. Now it's just Squeaky. No way Squeaky can be a gang all by himself. But anyway, jump on in. There will be more to come by, probably after the tardy bell. We don't have a tardy bell. And, of course, if you're listening to the podcast, please be so kind as to like each episode. Like, you know, there's a like. There's some kind of a button on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Odyssey, etc., etc., etc. And leave a comment here and there. And Brother Deacon is slowly beginning to despair, waiting for reviews to appear. Poor man's just withering away. Yeah. At any rate, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. And boy, oh boy, do we have them. But I'm not going to get ahead of myself, because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so as a consequence, we say thank you, this being a Monday, we say thank you to our 11th, 10th, and 9th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And thank you. That means thank you to Tony and Chico, who is one of our longest-standing subscribers. Thank you, Tony. And thanks as well to David in Oregon. Thank you, Christopher, also in Oregon. Thank you to John in Maryland. Hey, John. And thank you as well to Daniel and to our buddy from long back, Joe. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Mary Bell. And Ralphs. And James.
And thank you, Barbara, jumping in late on the 8th. Thank you so much. So that gets us down. Where are we? We are at 9:05. 9:05. So that means that today, Friday, and Thursday are unfunded. And, oh boy, $5 of last thorn in the side Thursday. So thanks for getting us that far down the road. Thank you so, so very much. We're at 9:05, and maybe we can finish Friday on the front porch today. It would be wonderful. That would be 3:05. That would get us down to $600 to go. And the PayPal button is at headon.live. And if you'd like to be a subscriber, gosh, we certainly need them. And you can either be a subscriber, and it'll come out today, at or whatever day you click on, whatever day you decide to subscribe. And if you subscribe for $10, you're in for considerably less than the cost of a McDonald's hamburger, no cheese. Less than half of the cost of a McDonald's hamburger, no cheese. Amazing, isn't it? Less than half of the cost of half of a stick of Wrigley's gum, neither of which are paid product placements. And all per, you know, for each show. There's not many things you can, and you know, we don't play the intellectual property game where you're just buying a lease. I mean, you download the program, you can have a blast with it. This ain't no iTunes or nothing, although you can get it at Apple Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Google Podcasts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if we could raise $300 this evening, we'd kind of maintain status quo. We'd be fully funded for last week, which is fantastic. Thanks for all of you who helped knock out last week's, a significant portion of last week's funding. That was a community made mini miracle on Friday. So where do we find ourselves with this Moran Monday? Well, we are, as the Carnival Barker has been known to say, up to our armpits in morans. Ralph's is adding a $25 challenge for, and I think this is a good place to start. This feels kind of vapid, but it was entertaining, and I'm not going to hate myself or anyone else for having watched the Oscars last night. It was one of the more enjoyable Oscars broadcasts that I can remember in recent memory. Nobody got slapped, whether they deserved it or not. And there was no mix-up with the cards, and there were some cute moments, and bless her heart, Emma Stone is absolutely adorable, and the fact that she had a problem with her dress with Jennifer Lawrence standing up there thinking, girl, I've been there, was just charming. I don't think I've got to worry about any spoilers here. I mean, it's all been... And I was talking with Tracy earlier today, and she's like, I have tried 3 times to watch Poor Things, and that is just some weird shit. And I've never even heard of the film, and I guess I'm going to have to fire it up on Hulu, is it? She told me it's on Hulu now. I want to see that. I want to see Zone of Interest. I was terribly curious about all of the films. Still haven't seen Oppenheimer. Poor Martin Scorsese. I know, that's a weird thing to say, but poor Martin Scorsese. Killers of the Flower Moon, by any metric, is a brilliant film. And didn't win diddly. Oppenheimer won for best costumes. I felt like that was misplaced. But whatever. The I'm Just Ken production number with Ryan Gosling last night was just it was a house rocker. And Margot Robbie was sobbing happy tears, and Ryan Gosling was resplendent in his hot pink tux. John Cena, whom I have no idea who he is because I live under a cultural rock. Apparently he's one of those men that prances around in a wrestling ring in like little lycra panties or something. And they allow children to watch such things. Oh, God, go figure. Well, you know, try to struggle through, Emilio. Emilio says, no slappage? Boring! Oh, but it wasn't. And so Ralph says, a $25 challenge for Jimmy Kimmel's reply to dipshit Donnie. And it was a great little moment. So if somebody'd like to kick in $25, Ralph's will happily double it. And that'll get us down to $8.55. So thank you, Ralphs. It was absolutely delightful what happened at the end of the Oscars. Jimmy Kimmel went back for a costume change and came back and said, well, got a few minutes to kill. Anybody want to say anything? And he said, the early review, well, let me see if I can just find the clip. Yeah, there it is. It's the propensity for Nitwit Nero to go tap dance. Well, he can't tap dance. He can barely walk. But to go sashaying around a yard full of rakes. You know, it's more like a parking lot full of rakes. And it's just whack right in the face. Whack right in the face. Whack right in the face. Because he's not funny. He's just an adipose bag of bile and vengeance and petty jealousies, and it's pitiful if he wasn't so odious. So this was the moment, and it really is one for the ages, because listen, they'll teach you early on. I mean, I got this in law school. Maybe they teach it in other places. They probably teach it in like communications departments and things like that. The way it was expressed to me was you never pick a fight with a man who buys ink by the barrel. And given the demise of newspapers and whatnot, well, it's still valid. And you never try to snark at someone who handles hecklers as a function of their living. The first thing a quality comedian has to do is learn how to handle hecklers. And a lot of them come out of the comedy club scene, which means, by definition, they're dealing with, drunks. You suck! You know, that kind of thing. Wow, that was halfway a Trump impression already, wasn't it?
You suck.
And I gotta give props to whoever... Maybe Jimmy Kimmel came up with this on the fly, because this happened in real time. Because, well, here it is.
Has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars?
His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Sloppenopoulos. He would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Blah, blah, blah. Make America great again. Okay, now, see if you can guess which former president just posted that on Truth Social. Anyone? No? Well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
And the thing is, he was watching. And he heard that. And it went through him. You know it went through him. You know it made him seethe. The entire staff at MAGA Loco yelled, "Incoming!" And the ketchup began to fly at the walls. But what a great line. Aren't you up past your jail time? And the roar, the hilarious roar of the audience. I think he's going to have to, Nitwit Nero, that is, he's going to have to add some more names to the to his enemies list. So there's that. And then there was the blistering and, you know, curiously enough, we were speculating on Friday on the front porch as to who might play Katie Britt on Saturday Night Live after, because there was no way they were not going to touch Katie Britt. And I suggested Cecily Strong. Well, I was wrong. They, you know, go big or go home. And they went out and got Scarlett Johansson, who made just a terrifying, an absolutely terrifying Katie Britt, who is still good at, you know, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity, but in Katie Britt's case, I think we're going to have to make an exception. You'll see what I'm on about here. I mean, Scarlett Johansson caught the total vibe, the vocal intonations, all the creepiness. And here we go.
Good evening. I'm Abby Phillips. If you're just joining us, President Biden has finished delivering his State of the Union address. Biden needed to show energy tonight, and he didn't disappoint. After a brief 45 minutes of selfies on the way to the podium, Biden began his speech with a bang. Let's take a look.
All right. Thank you. All right. I just pounded a Celsius. Let's do this. Woo! All right. Okay. Mr. Speaker. Too slow. Let's go. All right, everybody. Folks, tonight I'm going to cover a lot. There's going to be a lot of applause. So, Kamala, I hope you didn't skip leg day, girl. You're going to be up and down all night. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Woo! Woo! Let's go. tonight, I'm also going to be talking about my predecessor, mainly because every time I say predecessor, Mike Johnson shakes his head like he just accidentally caught 30 seconds of the show Euphoria. Look at that weirdo. Oh. Now, I actually tried to fix the border crisis, but the bill was tanked by my predecessor. Oh, you don't like that? Oh, you don't like that? Oh, anybody want to say something to me?
I do. Boo! Liar.
What? Whoa! Whoa! Marjorie. Yeah, thanks for dressing up tonight. Anyway, you know, I'd stay here and talk to you all more, but I saw a glimpse of the Republican senator's response to my speech. And I think she's going to help me more than anything else I can say here. Enjoy.
All in all, a strong speech from President Biden. But let's follow his advice and take a look at the Republican response from Alabama Junior Senator Katie Britt.
America, my name is Katie Britt, and I have the honor of serving the great people of Alabama. But tonight, I'll be auditioning for the part of Scary Mom. And I'll be performing an original monologue called This Country is Hell. You see, I'm not just a senator, I'm a wife, a mother, and the craziest bitch in the Target parking lot. I'm worried about the future of our children, and this is why I've invited you into this strange, empty kitchen. Because Republicans wanted me to appeal to women voters, and women love kitchen. Seriously, my husband Wesley and I just watched President Biden's speech, and what I saw was the performance of a permanent politician. But me, I'm not performing. I'm not. I'm not. But first and foremost, I'm a mom. And like any mom, I'm going to do a pivot out of nowhere into a shockingly violent story about sex trafficking. And rest assured, every detail about it is real, except the year, where it took place, and who was president when it happened. Tonight, I am not just responding to the State of the Union. I am also selling these gorgeous bejeweled cross necklaces. This affinity diamond necklace goes with anything, and you can wear it from the church to the club. And now I'm gonna get weirdly seductive for no apparent reason. As I was saying. The American dream has turned into a nightmare. You know, my husband Wesley and I spend a lot of time in this kitchen worrying. Kitchens are where families have the hard conversations. Like the one we'll have tomorrow about how mommy freaked out the entire country. But y'all, Biden's the one who is destroying our country. Just ask yourself, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Back in the good old days of 2020, the year that nothing bad happened? And it can be that way again. Oh my God, I guess I can sing. That's so great. But our country is not. It's like I tell my kids every night, we are steeped in the blood of patriots in a castle made of bones. Good night, kids. And speaking of tea, my tea is ready. American people who are struggling right now, know this. We hear you. We see you. We smell you. We're inside your kitchen right now, looking through your fridge. And what's that on the top shelf? Migrants. I think that analogy went well. In conclusion, to the President of the United States, I'll just say this. Mr. Biden, this isn't the last you'll see of Katie Britt. Maybe not in politics, but when you close your eyes, I'll be right there. And live from New York, it's Saturday night!
I think Scarlett may... Yeah, if it turns out that some of the scuttlebutt is true, and she is, in fact, auditioning to be Nitwit Nero's vice presidential nominee, Scarlett may have a gig, at least until November. Kind of the way that Tina Fey had a gig deconstructing Godzilla from Wasilla. It still remains absolutely shockingly awful. I mean, she buried Marco Rubio's thirsty, literally, not in the sexy way, response to the State of the Union, and Piyush Jindal's terribly uncomfortable response to the State of the Union in the far, far past. And, I mean, if you were one of the Democratic senators, and people have talked about how nice it is to work with Katie Britt, you almost wish that we had a mean girl on in well, wait a minute. I've heard Amy Klobuchar can be pretty fucking mean. But somebody would just walk up to her and say, girl, really? I'm sorry, this just... But I'm not the only one. Oh, no. They were still fired up over at My Filthy Morning Habit today. And it was a mess. And they, too, continued to be astonished. With Jehoshaphat pointing out, he just keeps walking into traps. Talking, as we just did, about Jimmy Kimmel's sick burn, as the hip kids say. Jehoshaphat said, that's the thing. I guess he doesn't understand. He just keeps walking into traps. He keeps again, you know, and I was sitting there and I said, stepping on rakes, Joe, stepping on rakes. It's like an old fighter that's past his prime, Jehoshaphat continued. The things that may have worked, it may have been disruptive, 6-7, you know, 2016, everybody knows what's coming. He's the butt of the joke for millions of people last night. And he was. On the other hand, he had a bad day in court today. His driver of the presidential limousine, who was behind the wheel on January 6th, testimony was released today. That in which his driver testified that he did continuously demand to go to the Capitol to participate in the domestic terrorist attack. The witness said he didn't see him reach for the wheel. So, in large part, Cassidy Hutchinson's account has been corroborated. Oh, I think everybody said that, Flavio. Tom Nichols Flavio says. The Atlantic's Tom Nichols, who called it, there's just no way Katie Britt's State of the Union response doesn't make it to the SNL cold open. That's like predicting rain when it's cloudy. But it, you know, bless their hearts, they did not disappoint. I mentioned Cassidy Hutchinson. And the maggots issued a new report today trying to discredit her testimony. You'll recall that he did, she said, he demanded to go to the Capitol. Well, Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, who apparently is kin to Kathy Sue Loudermilk, the late, great Louis Grizzard, one of his early books was Kathy Sue Loudermilk, I Love You. Barry Loudermilk issued a new January 6th report who said that unnamed Trump White House staffers disagreed with Cassidy Hutchinson. None of the White House employees corroborated Hutchinson's sensational story about President Trump lunging for the steering wheel of the beast. But some of those same witnesses said he sure was irate after he gave his speech at the Ellipse and didn't get to go to the Capitol and insurrect along with everybody else was having all the fun. So, once again, they set out to do one thing and did the other. They thought they were discrediting her, and, well, the maggots right there following their dear leader and stepping on the rakes with him. But the gang at My Filthy Morning Habit were not going to leave Katie Britt alone either. Because it turned, you know, because what was mentioned in that clip there about, you know, everything was correct about that story about the sex trafficking at the border, except, you know, when it happened, the country it happened in, and who was president. And all that's true.
I traveled to the Del Rio sector of Texas. That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12.
That was Republican Senator Katie Britt of Alabama in her rebuttal address to President Biden's State of the Union, linking a graphic account of a young woman's sex trafficking to Biden's immigration policies.
And saying she couldn't believe that this happened in the United States of America.
But the abuse actually happened during President George W. Bush's administration.
Ow.
Nearly 20 years ago. And
ow.
Not in America.
Ow.
In Mexico.
Ow.
She was asked about that yesterday on Fox News.
Did you mean to give the impression that this horrible story happened on President Biden's watch?
No, Shannon, look, I very specifically said this is what President Biden did during his first 100 days. Minutes after coming into office, he stopped all deportations. He halted construction of the border wall.
But to be clear, the story that you relate is not something that's happened under the Biden administration, that particular person.
I very clearly said I spoke to a woman who told me about when she was trafficked when she was 12.
Charlie, there's nothing clear about it. The entire, and I don't, again, listen.
How you walk that back.
Listen,
response.
Stuff happens in politics. Bad speeches are made. You know, and it's always better to go out and say, man, I blew that one. And people will forgive you for it, and they'll even like you better for it, for saying, yeah, boy, wow, was I off on that, and I'm so sorry. And by the way, I told this story, and I conflated some facts and issues and dates, and I'm really sorry for that, but I hope you understand my bigger point is that the Biden administration's policies from day one have been disastrous. Like, she could have said that. But I don't know who's advising her, but to double down after that performance, the wrong thing to do. Own it like Biden is owning his age.
Yes, but in MAGA world, you can never apologize, right?
That's correct.
Being a Republican these days is never having to say you're sorry. And that was not just misleading. I mean, that was a purposeful lie. And I think that we're seeing this again and again. Look, we know that part of the narrative is that Joe Biden is weak on the border. And as a result, we're being subject to all of this migrant crime. So you have Elon Musk over the weekend tweeting out a completely bogus meme about, you know, illegal immigrants who are committing crimes and Joe Biden is giving them awards. Then you have Katie Britt coming up with this this gruesome and grisly story that has no relation whatsoever to what's happening on the border. Now, somebody had to know that. Somebody had to recognize that this was a problem. She goes ahead with it anyway, maybe figuring nobody would figure it out. And then when she's confronted with it, she gives that complete denial. Look, I think one of the obvious questions is, if in fact this is a terrible, terrible problem, if there are examples of migrant crime, then, you know, why do you have to make up the ones that did not occur? I mean, these are realities. This is something that the Biden administration is going to have to deal with. But it is interesting. It would be interesting to know who advised Katie Britt, who advised her on the drama, who advised her on the lies to give, because it didn't do her any favors at all.
No.
You know, it's so interesting you said that, because, again, that's a question of a couple of people who know her and I were talking this weekend. And we're like, who advised
her?
What
happened?
Like, she's a very likable person, Charlie. If you just talk to her one-on-one, very likable, has been very likable, no nonsense. Again, Richard Shelby, worked for Richard Shelby. Yeah. She doesn't come naturally from the MAGA wing, but... Charlie, who advised her? Who told her this was the right thing to do? It's crazy.
Well, I have no idea, but I will say that Scarlett Johansson had a much tougher job than you might think, because how do you do a parody of what is a parody itself? I mean, you know, at the top of this hour, you played a bit from Katie Britt, and it's hard to outdo how strange that was, how the overacting. And again, this is, maybe it's just the curse of the State of the Union response. It seems like every politician that does it falls flat on their face. But clearly this was badly conceived from the beginning. And, you know, and it is funny, but this lie about the migrants, I think, is important, because this is going to be a massive theme in 2024. There will be caravans. They will try to take victims and exploit them politically. They've done this in the past, and they're going to do it. So you can see that these are not just one-off gaffes. This is part of a narrative that they're trying to craft. And she fell flat on her face, you know, and on a very, very big stage here.
Well, as you said, the crazy thing is, you know, they have these lies before every election, the migrant caravans with people coming up with leprosy, and it never works.
Right.
Again, they lose. They tried it in 2018. They lost. They tried it in 2020. They lost. They tried it in 2022. They lost. It is a loser, because people understand they're lying. And think about the point Charlie just made. The situation is so horrific and so unspeakably bad that they had to make up. They had to make up a story that they attached to Biden instead of telling the truth about it, that it went all the way back to George W. Bush.
The situation is so horrific that they put off an opportunity to deal with it. They killed the Lankford bill.
Right.
That the president offered them.
That would have closed the border.
And then got on national television and lied.
Yeah.
Lied like a rug.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie Sykes, thank you very much. We're going to do a little sports now, I guess.
Yeah, we are. We're following some NFL.
Yeah, no sense in... because then all the serious people turn it off because they're going to talk about sports. Flavio pointing out, I get the feeling there are many more insurrectionists in Congress than we're aware of. Yeah, that's Sulla in ancient Rome talking about Gaius Julius Caesar saying there are, I'll let him live, but I see many Mariuses in this man. Yeah. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I suspect that the reason that Nitwit Nero mentioned George Stephanopoulos is because of what happened when she spoke on ABC's This Week, when, well, George Stephanopoulos pointed out what a raging hypocrite she is for claiming to be a victim of rape and at the same time being in complete and total support of, well, you know, a rapist. And I want to give credit where credit is due. We have seen and we have discussed other occasions where reporters will ask people, I forget who the practitioner of multimillionaire for-profit media journalism was, who asked Mrs. Governor, Ambassador, Speaker of the House, Haley, about supporting a rapist in the form of Nitwit Nero. And she said, well, I mean, whatever. And the journalist just let that blow past. Well, George Stephanopoulos decided not to be caught out doing the same with Nancy Mace. Now, Nancy Mace is officially in trouble in her district in the greater Charleston, South Carolina area. She has been targeted by the butthurt Kevin McCarthy wing of the MAGA party for being one of the mean girls who smashed that old mayonnaise jar that had Kevin McCarthy's testicles in it in vacating the speaker, last year. Well, again, credit to George Stephanopoulos and his crew, because they were ready for Nancy Mace, who has gone, you know, has gone full MAGA, and here we are. And all, it's so gross. These maggot women, Nancy Mace, Katie Britt, Elsie Stupidnik, all of whom actually enjoyed a reputation as being reasonable until they decided to sell themselves out for the maggot cheese. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Maggot cheese. Sorry. Matt in San Francisco writing in about Katie. During her address, when she started describing the rape, I turned to my husband and said, I doubt that happened. It was just too graphic, and she seems to be getting off while describing it. If a Republican's lips are moving, they're lying. Well, this, exactly, Matt, and in this instance, it had to be, again, for the reasons you state, And yeah, she did seem to enjoy it, and I gotta tell you, that creeps me out, and I'm a little worried about Mr. Britt. And by the way, my apologies to those of you who dropped a note to me over the course of the weekend and told me how creepy you thought my Katie Britt impression was. And when I did it, what, Friday? You know, the whispery voice about how she'd like to smother somebody with a pillow. By the way, I had a note over the weekend from Joni. Hey, Joni. Listening from the standpoint of an 80-year-old female, I think I'm seeing the end of the United States as a country. Just look at the sallow, sunken face of McConnell now that his sister-in-law has been sacrificed. He suddenly stepped down from his beloved position and made to suffer in silence for his disobedience in the past. You asked where the Bushes are? Why no comment? Maybe they want their families and themselves to see tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Joan, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. You know, there used to be jokes about the Biden crime family, and they were a criminal enterprise. And, of course, we've spent 4 years. I meant Bush. The Bush crime family. Then there's the Biden crime family over the last 4 years, and that's... Yeah, Biden crime family. Hunter Biden. Yeah, draws that Hunter Biden like a gun. But I get the idea that they were pikers compared to this serious mob boss wannabe that is Donald Trump. But it was good to hear from you, Joni. Cynthia was catching up on Saturday the 9th as well. And call the motherfucking child-marrying states' rights bastards what they really are. Pedophiles. We used to arrest such people and throw them in jail. Why aren't they behind bars? More on that in a minute. Recall the purveyor of Jesus chicken who drove from Belmont, Ohio to Rowan County, North Carolina to have sex with a 15-year-old. I guess they just can't... Well, they are who they are, and who they are is disgusting and pedophilic. But again, more on that in a minute. But again, Nancy Mace, who tried vainly to evade George Stephanopoulos' question. You'll hear what I mean.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
Of course, that wasn't the intention. It has nothing to do with shaming her. It's a straightforward question. How do you square the fact that you're supporting a rapist who has been determined to be a rapist by two separate juries in two separate cases, and yet you're out there beating the drum for him? And so she tries to make it about herself. How dare you? I done got raped when I was sick, and I'm not making light of it. But I feel like it's absolutely okay to burn her to the ground for her blatant hypocrisy. and her mercilessness toward her Orange God Emperor's victim.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about
Donald
Trump.
No, you are shaming
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Oh, gosh, Nancy, why don't you ask what she was wearing while you're at it? Does this strike you as disgusting as it struck me? And there's only one thing, you know. I know George knows. Because George knows things. But as ready as they were for all of this, when she said, first of all, it was a civil judgment, the great comeback to that would be, are you saying that civil trial judgments are not valid? That a finding by a civil jury of rape, confirmed later by the judge to have been, in fact, rape, is not valid? Is that what you're saying? Because Mr. Goldman would like a word. Because if that's the case, if a civil judgment of rape isn't rape, the civil judgment of the jury that said O.J. Simpson murdered Nicole, well, I guess that's not valid either, is it, Nancy? It's merely a difference in standard of proof. And the standard of proof in a civil case is not as high as it is in a criminal case because personal liberty is not at stake. Sit, liberty, sit. This is an entirely bullshit argument on her part and a desperate attempt to run away from the fact that she is, in fact, a supporter of a rapist. That she is giving a rapist a pass. Back to the audio.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they?
It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive, and I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
Well, in fact,
I have dealt with this for 30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, or incest in there. I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive, and this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
They are judged and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning.
I
think it's disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all. I
told my story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
And I answered it. You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It was not a criminal court.
It was a civil court.
And by the way, she joked about the judgment and what she was going to do with all that money. And I find that offensive.
I'm asking you
but
about
as
the man
a
who's...
rape victim who's been shamed for years now because of her rape, you're trying to shame me again by asking
me
this political question.
You know, it's funny how everything shames Nancy Mace except the fact that Nitwit Nero raped E. Jean Carroll. Oh, and by the way, Nance, when you were compelled to come forward because there was no exception for rape in the anti-abortion bill you're discussing, as you said, 5 years ago, that would be pre-Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, and you desperately wanted to stand up for a right for rape victims to have abortion care, your party was the one doing that. And if she happens to be talking about some godforsaken bill in South Carolina, Stan, well, the only rape exception there is if, say, the 16-year-old girl goes to the police station, reports the rape, names the rapist, puts herself at tremendous hazard when she should just be able to go and get it taken care of. But Nancy Mace was okay with that. And the simple nauseating horror, trigger warning, of expecting a 12-year-old girl, a 16-year-old girl, who perhaps has been raped by her daddy, to go and drop the dime on daddy. Wow. That tells how much concern that Nancy Mace has, too.
You repeated that again.
I think
again
it's offensive. As a woman, I find it offensive.
My political
choices, I've endorsed the man that I believe is best for our country. It's not Joe Biden. And you looked at the dueling rallies yesterday in Georgia. Lake and Riley's family was with Donald Trump. They weren't with Joe Biden. The same guy yesterday that apologized for calling her killer an illegal, who wasn't illegal. And here you are trying to shame a rape victim. I find it disgusting.
I mean, you keep saying I'm shaming you.
It is.
How is the question asking about a presidential candidate who's
You're
been
asking a rape victim.
And there's no question about that. And you've courageously talked about
that. Because I've been raped. I think that's disgusting.
No, I'm questioning your political choices because you're supporting someone who's been found liable for rape. Actually, I'm not trying to
You are.
You.
That's exactly
You're not
what
answering
you're
the question.
I think it's disgusting.
Well, you're welcome to say that, but you also have to answer the question. Why are you supporting someone who's been found liable for rape?
I just answered your question.
What is the answer?
He was not found guilty in a criminal court of law. It was sexual abuse. It wasn't actually rape, by the way. And E. Jean Carroll joked about all the money she's going to get and made a mockery out of this case. And I think that's offensive. There's a reason why women don't come forward. And when you have someone who says that they're raped and they make a mockery out of this civil court judgment, it's offensive to other women. It makes it harder for other women to come forward when another woman has made a mockery of it.
You said women don't come forward because they are afraid. They are afraid
they're
because
judged
they are defamed
and shamed
by those
like
who
you're trying to shame
they,
me this morning.
They are afraid to come forward, as you said, because they are defamed by those who commit the rape. That's what Donald Trump has been
judged.
Found guilty of doing.
He defended himself over that and denies that it ever happened, but he was not found guilty in a criminal court of law. It was a civil judgment.
So is that
judgment
the distinction you're making?
Abuse.
A civil judgment is okay, but a criminal judgment
is not.
This
is different, and they didn't even input all of the evidence into the civil case either, because some of the information she provided wasn't even accurate or correct. But to sit here and ask me...
Oh, suddenly she's a trial lawyer. I see.
...as a rape victim to try to shame me for my political choices is wrong, and I think it's offensive.
You can repeat that again.
That's all she's got. It's offensive. That's a fantab. You're shunning me.
Again and again, I've done nothing to shame you. You don't find it offensive that Donald Trump has been found liable for rape?
I find it offensive as a rape victim that you're trying to shame me for my political choices. And I've said again repeatedly, E. Jean Carroll has made a mockery out of rape by joking about it. I don't...
Notice how it went from you're shaming me to you're shaming me for my political... It went from you're shaming me for being raped to you're shaming me for my political choices. You're shaming me for having my nose up where the sun don't shine on Donald Trump. This orangish brown ain't never coming off my nose.
I don't find that funny. Well, rape is not funny.
You've made it
rape
perfectly
is serious.
Clear. You've made it perfectly clear.
Rape
you're comfortable.
Is serious.
It is
it's
serious.
It's not funny, and it shouldn't be made a mockery of. But if you want to defend a woman who made a mockery out of rape, then you go ahead and do that. I'm not going to do that.
Well, actually, what you're doing is defending a man who's been found liable for rape. I don't understand how you can do that.
Not in a criminal court of law. This was a civil judgment over sexual abuse. Not.
See how nice it would have been if he would have brought up the O.J. Simpson civil judgment? O.J. was acquitted of murder, but he was found to be a murderer by a civil jury. Was O.J. not a murderer, Nancy? Why doesn't she say, I mean, you know, it's like that old pool room case, you know, as long as he had one foot on the floor. Only one person was harming rape victims in this interview. And it was Nancy Mace. No getting around it. Sexual assault and rape in a civil case. Steve in New York says that doesn't count. Nancy Mace is obviously a disgusting whore for Donald Trump. Let's not demean sex workers. Sex work is work. But your point is not lost, Steve. She is disgusting. She has no morals. She has no ethics. The stories have been legion about her staff absolutely flipping out, quitting, about what a mean girl she is, and about the fact that she may not see another term in Congress. And she's not particularly happy about that.
Not rape, by the way, and she made a mockery out of it.
Can we pull up the Washington Post headline right there? In fact, it has been shown to be rape. The judge affirmed that it was, in fact, rape. Donald Trump was found to have committed rape. That's just a fact.
That's just a fact, and it's not like Lewis Kaplan only tries civil cases. I don't know if on balance Nancy Mace got the better of George Stephanopoulos, but like I said, this is probably why Nitwit Nero was going off on George Stephanopoulos in his rake stomping tirade against Jimmy Kimmel. Steve adding, the way I hear it, she's shaming E. Jean Carroll. Not often does a political interview make me literally nauseous. This one literally made me nauseous. And Matt in San Francisco observes, it's okay if you can't tell whether it's a finger or his chubby? Right. Or if he's got at least one foot on the floor. And what was she wearing? I've been cringing since the first time I saw this video. But he did confront her with the Washington Post headline, Judge clarifies, yes, Trump was found to have raped E. Jean Carroll.
A civil judgment, not a criminal court. They're two very different things, and you know better.
Well, I just showed you the facts.
You know better.
You show that you're very comfortable with what Donald Trump
has done. And what you've done is offensive to women who've been raped. What you've done this morning is offensive.
Yeah, because she, Nancy Mace, speaks for all women who have been raped, except, of course, E. Jean Carroll. This is the kind of shit that sets back and does actual damage to rape victims. Not because George Stephanopoulos asked her a question. He never once asked her about the particulars of her own assault. He repeatedly asked her why she was supporting a man who committed something similar. He was, in essence, asking Nancy Mace why she had no empathy whatsoever for E. Jean Carroll and nothing but fawning adoration for E. Jean Carroll's rapist. Well, if there's anything out there resembling justice...
You're watching CNN.
Nah, stop that. Even Fox News TV Radio Rwanda fact checked the daylights out of her. she lost round one and she ran over for some friendly coverage and lost round two.
Say to the American people about that.
Well, I find it very ironic, Senator Lankford's comments there, because this bill keeps the border wide open. There are so many loopholes in this bill, it'll make your head spin. And any Republican that supports it supports open borders, because it's going to allow Secretary Mayorkas to have full discretion on who comes in above that 5,000 limit. It lowers the standard for those that are seeking asylum. And look, the American people are tired of being an ATM machine for the illegal aliens that are coming across our border every single day. And the more that I read language in this bill, the more frustrated I get with it, because it's not what we're being sold.
I think we're all trying to...
Where's the ATM for the illegals coming across the border portion of the bill? Because it's not in there.
To figure out this bill, have you...
I mean, she's making shit up on a Katie Britt level. See how that works now? Oh, I haven't heard anything... I haven't heard a lie that outrageous since Katie Britt.
Read all 370 pages of this bill?
We are working through it. We have about 50 pages more to go, but from what we can tell, and I'm going to put forth a statement once we finish reading the bill, the measures that we feel are extremely undesirable, that keep our border open, that water down the asylum system, it's not good for the country.
Well, they say
quite
exactly
frankly.
The opposite. That's why I'm asking, you know, and obviously Senator Lankford and his colleagues, you know, worked hard to negotiate something. You know, it's hard to do some actual negotiation, and they say no new asylum claims would be allowed. Anybody crossing would be removed and he said, you know, this, it ends the whole idea of I made it to U.S. soil and now you have to process me. It increases detention beds, doubles the deportation flights, and adds $650 million to expand the
deportation
border wall, which is the
gotta
same
love that Fox News journalism
HR2. So, you know, isn't getting something better than getting nothing, because this problem isn't going away?
No, but when you have a loophole on the other side of it on the very next page in the bill that puts a squash on any of that you're talking about there, and allows the Secretary Mayorkas, allows bureaucrats to make these decisions rather than courts, that waters down the reasoning behind those seeking asylum, lowers the standard for those seeking asylum, that's what we're talking about here. That's the language that we're reading in the bill. And part of what I can tell is that we're not being told the truth here about the bill. And I'm going to put out a statement that goes through it page by page, just like I did that bad debt ceiling bill last year, that will outline.
No, she. It's tough when you go to Fox and you get fact checked in real time. It's terrible. And, you know, then there was the overall comeuppance for the lying that she did to George Stephanopoulos. And then she got burnt. She got roasted. She got fried. She got seared. And so when she got done with George and George got done with her, she ran off to social media and said, I'm not going to be shamed for being raped by a guy who worked for a president who wagged his finger and lied to the American people about having oral sex with an intern in the Oval Office. Shut the fuck up, Stephanopoulos. That's a classic case of thinking of coming up with what you really wanted to say long after the time was passed for saying it. But, well, Lisa Rubin has a passion for these things called facts. And she said, George Stephanopoulos left the Clinton White House in December 1996, well before his former boss's deception about his abuse of power with respect to a woman we collectively shamed, if not tormented, for decades. But he didn't shame you. What he did was press you for an explanation. He was asking how you reconcile your personal experience and public advocacy on behalf of rape victims with your support for a man who's been found liable for sexual assault by a jury of his peers. I cannot imagine what you've been through, and for telling your story, especially as a woman with a public profile, you deserve empathy and support. But as both a prominent voice for women within your party and a Trump supporter, what you are not entitled to is a pass. And that is what she wanted. Well, because we all know what the real answer is. I'm probably going to lose my seat. I got to do whatever is necessary to placate, palliate, and head pat the maggots. I have to demonstrate my devotion, because now most of my own colleagues in my own caucus in the House of Representatives hates my guts. Because I went along with the defenestration of Kevin McCarthy. And look what we've got now. And Lisa Rubin was not the only one. Oh, no. She went on and, well, this time she went to X and posted an excrement. I was asked to speak on 2024 today, not my own rape. I've carried this shame for 30 years, a shame George Stephanopoulos will never know. I don't need George Stephanopoulos mansplaining rape to me or shaming me on national TV for being a survivor of rape. That was probably not the best thing she could have done. People chimed in quickly and brutally. Ain't about you. It's Trump the sexual predator you're okay with. Or, okay, lady, we get. You're supporting a guy who was found liable of sexual battery because he lowers taxes for billionaires and you want to be his VP. That's all you got to say. Another, you should be ashamed. Not for surviving a rape, but for supporting a rapist. No one's buying your obfuscation. You're a victim, and you're supporting a victimizer. It doesn't make sense. She's vile. She's simply vile. And Dave and the Blind, Katie. There are a lot of lessons in the Republican Party. There's brainless, gutless, spineless, and let's not forget about everybody's favorite member of the Republican family, Cousin Directionless. Now, compare that to President Biden, the guy who is not sleepy or even drowsy, who came out fighting and is still holding their feet to the fire. I got a lighter, Mr. President. You need to light the tinder. We can roast them because making fun of them is the best way to get under their skin. Comedy shall save us. I've been saying the clown's prayer regularly this week and thinking of Scott, who's got to be sitting somewhere going, damn it, I told her this was all going to happen. I love you, Horn Family Community Congregation, your buddy, Dave, the Blind. George and Korsgold letting us know Trump Brian Butler, the Trump employee who moved banker boxes out of Mar-a-Lago, was just interviewed by Caitlin Collins. Hopefully we will get to that. And Flavio has a question. Why is Judge Marchand in the hush money election interference case releasing the names of jurors, addresses, and phone numbers to Trump's defense and Trump when he knows that's as good as broadcasting them? I am frankly perplexed. Because we do not... Remember, this is a state case. This is controlled by New York law, not federal law. And New York has its own rules of procedure, its own rules of evidence, its own rules of criminal procedure. Steve may be more helpful here than I can be. But we don't throw due process and equal protection out the window just because the defendant is the most odious man on the planet. He does not know, Flavio, that allowing Trump's counsel to see the names and address and phone numbers of the jurors is as good as broadcasting them. He does not know that. There is a significant difference between knowing and suspecting, knowing and surmising, knowing and theorizing. The judge does not know this. And once again, the judge has to protect any potential verdict, especially if it is a verdict of guilt. Now, what he can do is sequester the jury. And that would be awful for the members of the jury. And I think that there might even be some statistical evidence to suggest that sequestered juries will give a pass just to get out of the sequestration. But he doesn't know. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't have anything upon which he can base a finding of fact. There is no bright red line. There's no dots that are connected beyond a reasonable doubt or even by a preponderance of the evidence. Now, what can happen is if, as you suggest, they run right out there and engage in jury tampering, then he can act. Granted, the horse will already be out of the barn, but this is the system with which we live. And we can't change in midstream. We can't, the New York legislature can't run out and change the rules just because Donald Trump is in the dock. That would put paid to any conviction, too. As hateful as it is to say, as has been pointed out in another forum, he is a criminal defendant. He is just a citizen who is a criminal defendant, and he is thus entitled to every defense and every right that any other criminal defendant in this country, or in this case in particular in New York, is entitled to. As much as we might like to make the analogy with, say, the film version of The Untouchables, it ain't it. And this can all be terribly frustrating on any number of levels. I have a different case here. It comes out of Maine. It was published by the Los Angeles Blade. No, Flavio, I'm not going to carry this argument on with you by email. He does not know. Flavio says he knows because the judge in the E. Jean Carroll case had to tell the jurors at the end of the trial whose identities were protected, even told the jurors when he dismissed them, if he were them, he would not breathe a word that they were jurors. No, that does not create knowledge. It's also an entirely separate forum, an entirely separate venue, and an entirely separate court case. The fact that they both took place in Manhattan doesn't mean that they are both the state of New York. Judge Kaplan's case was federal. E. Jean Carroll's case was heard in a federal court. This is state court. And the only thing that Judge Marchand would be doing would be speculating. And speculating is the one thing that a judge may not, must not do. He doesn't know. He suspects. We're big into facts here. And it is not a fact established as yet. Now, what he can do and suspect has is he hasn't made the list public, and if the list does become public, or if he tripes about it, You know, theoretically, he could be gagged, but that comes with its own constitutional set of problems. I mean, there are countries where, you know, he could just be taken out behind a building somewhere and get a bullet put behind his ear. But I'm kind of glad we're not that country yet. I want the kind of justice he can't escape. I want him all the way to, you know, guilty by beyond a reasonable doubt. And then the trip to prison. We don't do proscriptions around here. And so that's not knowledge. But yeah, here's a similar case. We already know what Chaya Ratchik does. We know that she brags about being a stochastic terrorist. Actually brags. She, through her admitted stochastic terrorism, caused bomb threats to be made and threats against an individual teacher to be made at the high school in Owosso, where eventually poor Nex Benedict lost their life. Nex Benedict's blood, as far as I'm concerned, is, well, Chaya Ratchik may as well be sitting there with her fingers in the bowl with Madge the manicure lady, and you're soaking in it. Well, the story comes again from the Los Angeles Blade. And it has to do with the state of Maine. Lawmaker staff and visitors were forced to evacuate the state house after emailed bomb threats were sent. According to USA Today, Derek Grant, Secretary of the Maine Senate, and Anina Breen, Communications Director for the Maine Democratic Party, confirmed that the threats had been made and that the state and local law enforcement searched for explosive devices. However, none were found. According to the Kennebec Journal, those threats were also emailed to the Portland Press Herald, promised death to pedophiles, and it included a number of typos stating, "We are not to stand idly by as you degenerates mutilate our children and push your perverted sexual fantasy upon us." It said that there were bombs placed at the homes of State Representative Ann Perry and State Senator Donna Bailey, and the headquarters of the Maine Democratic Party, and the Maine State House, and said the bombs will detonate in a few hours. And ended with a dirty word, which was not printed by the Los Angeles Blade. This is because a bill was under consideration by the Maine legislature that protected providers of abortion care and gender-affirming care. Last Monday, before the Health Coverage, Insurance, and Financial Services Committee, which happens to be co-chaired by the two women who received the bomb threats, we're going to hold a hearing on the bill. And it was the second time in 3 months that the Maine legislature had been targeted by libs of TikTok, Chaya Ratchik. After her tweets, her excrements, bomb threats have been received in Connecticut, in Frankfort, in Kentucky, Lansing, Michigan, in Minnesota, in Jackson, Mississippi, and in Montana. Now, we all know, just like Judge Marchand knows, that whenever Chaya Ratchick attacks someone, her army of stochastic terrorists swing into action. According to NBC News, there are 33 instances when people or institutions singled out by Chaya Ratchick reported bomb threats or other violent intimidation. And she, of course, Chaya Ratchick, who proudly embraces the title stochastic terrorist, who is all of 29, by the way. Well, she's not facing any charges because she can't draw the line. This is a disturbing trend in the United States, but we live in a world with a fetishized First Amendment, and we use a standard called reasonable and foreseeable to provide a lace skirt for the Chaya Ratchicks of the world, and before Chaya Ratchick, for people like Bernard Goldberg and Bill O'Reilly, killer, the baby killer. Tiller, the baby killer. Tiller, the baby killer. Bang! No more Dr. Tiller. And Falafel Boy O'Reilly is walking free to this day. Or the Beckerhead. The Tides Foundation is progressive. Something has to be done. Frogs boiling in a pot. The Overton window. I was around for all of that. Until a guy got liquored up, put a bunch of guns in his trunk, and headed off to blow up the Tides Foundation in San Francisco. And the answer's always the same. Well, how could I possibly know that some Lulu out there would take me up on it? Like when, what was his name, Adkins? Took a gun into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Knoxville during a production, a children's production of Annie? And started wasting people and left a manifesto explaining in granular detail why he had to do what he did and explaining that, well, he knew he couldn't get to Nancy Pelosi, so he was just going to kill the kind of people who Nancy Pelosi supports and who think like Nancy Pelosi. I hate it, but here we are. By the way, we're at the halfway point of the program. Ralph still has a $25 Jimmy Kimmel challenge on the table if anyone would care to meet it, or some portion of it. The PayPal button's at headon.live. We are presently at $905 to go to get caught up, $305 to get fully funded for last week. And with all of the things that we've talked about thus far, there's so much more. Nancy Mace wanted to defend her orange shit stain God Emperor. Well, over the weekend, in the same Clavering conclave. Where Nitwit Nero mocked President Biden's stutter, he also attacked E. Jean Carroll again. In point of fact, what he said was, and if I didn't win on appeal on these ridiculous decisions,
If I didn't win on appeal is the most ridiculous decisions, and putting Miss Bergdorf Goodman, a person I never met, I have no idea who she is.
And Lisa Rubin was there again and said, I think one of the things that they have to think about is what would be the damages, even if the goal is to punish former President Trump for his continued defamation. They have to show in the first instance that she's been damaged. Well, that was after he attacked her and called her crazy on Saturday. The quote I just read comes from the Squawk Box in a phone interview. It's a hell of a thing. Counsel for E. Jean Carroll we talked about this yesterday, or Friday rather. He posted his bond, and Judge Kaplan said, well, if counsel for the plaintiff deserves to be heard on this, and if counsel for the plaintiff objects, then I will enter an order today. Well, guess what? Robbie Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's counsel, did have an objection. And, you know, he had posted a $91.6 million bond. And that $91.6 million is the $83.3 million he owes E. Jean Carroll, plus statutory interest that the state of New York gets to tack on. The Chubb Corporation is behind the bond. And Robbie Kaplan said, no, we don't necessarily oppose the bond, but we need a little change. Robbie Kaplan said, while we did have one limited objection concerning the timing of payment to the bond that defendant has posted in connection with his motion to stay enforcement of the judgment pending appeal, the parties have discussed the issue. As a result of those discussions, Federal Insurance Company, a Chubb Company grift, has authorized, and defendant's counsel will agree to stipulate that the 30-day periods listed on page 3 of the ECF Doc 318.1 will be shortened to 15 days, both for the principal and the surety. This will have the effect of shortening the overall window to 30 days. So, what happens is, after Nitwit Nero loses his appeal, which he will, then instead of having 30 days to send the payment and an extra 30 days after notice was sent, he's only got 30 days to make payment before Robbie Kaplan gets to start taking things. Joyce Vance said today that the provision was a bit unusual in the bond, giving Chubb, really, the goddess of irony just owns him. Chubb, that in San Francisco, was that was that on purpose that you used that? Well, never mind. Or maybe the goddess of irony was just inspiring you. Yeah, see, Darlene in Connecticut is thinking the same way. Chubb Corporation, seriously? Of course Drumpf would go for Chubb. Goddess of Irony just can't make this shit up. Actually, Darlene, I think the Goddess of Irony is making this shit up. She's playing Nitwit Nero and everybody around him like a pawn shop fiddle. Holy crap, tag, you're it. Great minds, girl, great minds. But Joyce Vance said it is unusual to give him 60 days from the date of final judgment entered to make payment. If Trump loses his appeal and doesn't pay the money, Chubb must tender the full amount. They can collect from Trump in turn, but doing that would be their problem. And there, so that's the next question. What kind of behind the scenes, outside the four corners of the agreement deal is there where Chubb just says, oh, it's okay. You can have $93 million. Sure. You got to think a U.S. attorney would look at something. And so Joyce Vance said in her blog, this is good news for E. Jean Carroll because the bond guarantees that the judgment will be paid if she prevails on appeal. And again, in Rome, Georgia, on Saturday, Whit Nero said, she made false accusations against me. I just posted a $91 million bond, $91 million on a fake story, totally made-up story. So now he's moved from impugning E. Jean Carroll, which he did, again. Yeah, just sue the life out of him. Every time he opens his mouth, file another suit, Robbie Kaplan. You got $91 million to play with. You're getting a third of that, honey. And that would, let's see, that would be $30,333,333.33, because anyone who has ever been near a plaintiff's practice can divide any number by three. Fake story, totally made up story. So, like I said, he's gone from impugning E. Jean Carroll to impugning the court and impugning the jury. I don't think you can sue for that, but nonetheless, well, it's time for us to once again invoke the name of Sage and Prophet Todd. He ain't gonna make it. And there's reason to really take that to heart. There's a transcript out now. He gave an interview about Social Security. As if he had any idea how Social Security even remotely works. Yeah, I think I mentioned that I've been watching Suits. It went off the air in, 2019, something like that. It ran for nine seasons, or so, 2018, I'm not sure. But there is a scene where an investment banker looks at one of the lawyers and says, we didn't go. We're investment bankers. We didn't go to Harvard like you lawyers did. We just hire, we do our deals and we just hire you to do the paperwork. We went to Wharton. And I got to tell you, I think that's from season four. So that'd be around 2014. And, of course, that's before the world descended into chaos and disease with Nitwit Nero in the White House. And I found myself thinking, gosh, I guess in 2014, having gone to Wharton really meant something. And that's before we found out that they gave that shambling, adipose, old wad of petty grievances, jealousies, and rage a degree. You know, do remember the Wharton professor who said that Donald Trump was the dumbest individual he had ever seen pass through his class. But anyway, back to the Social Security interview. Well, he He called for cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Because he's never going to have to worry about either one, he thinks. It's worth remembering that that great scion of wealth and self-interest, Ayn Rand, who penned the novels that inspired the cruelty for cruelty's sake class, it died in poverty on the public dime. And so, on Friday, even as we were gathered together around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable on the front porch in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves, it's so hard to keep up sometimes, he hosted Viktor Orban. He was my boyfriend. May the universe bless you wherever you are, Cloris Leachman. I love one of the nicknames for Orban that's been banging around lately. The pimp of Putinism. And by the way, there were a couple of significant call-outs at the Oscars last night. One was for 30 Days in Mariupol, in which the creators of that searing documentary said, "We wish we had never had to make this film. We wish the Russians had not invaded. We wish they had not killed Ukrainian people, taken Ukrainian people hostages, occupied Ukrainian cities." And the other was from the creators of Zone of Interest, who, when they picked up an Oscar, came to the stage and utterly excoriated Israel. And they, being Jewish, it was profound. So while a little over a year ago, February of 2023, Nitwit Nero is telling the maggots, "Don't cut a single penny from Social Security or Medicare." Well, each of his White House budget proposals, the Washington Post noted, included cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And so now he's going hammer and tongs, wanting to do exactly that, cutting Social Security and Medicare.
Effusive, truly effusive praise for authoritarian leaders from former President Donald Trump during an interview last night on Fox News. Here's what he said.
"They're all top of the line. Our guy's not top of the line. Never was. These are top of the line people at the top of their game. President Xi is a brilliant man. If you went all over Hollywood to look for somebody to play the role of President Xi, you couldn't find him. There's nobody like that. The look, the brain, the whole thing. We had a great relationship. We got along so well. There was a great chemistry we had. Great. We talked about everything. A great chemistry. But people ask me, how smart is she? I said, top of the line. You never met anybody smarter. How smart is Kim Jong-un? Top of the line. You know, people say, oh, this and that. Really smart. You know, when you come out and as a young man at 24, 23, even though he sort of inherits it, most people, when they inherit, they lose it. And that's easy stuff. He took over a country of very smart people, very, very energetic people, very tough people, at a very young age, and he has total dominant control. That's not easy. These are very smart. Putin, very smart.
It takes your breath away. I mean, Joe,
it really does.
Talking about she like a matinee idol, the Hollywood look, the brains, all of it. And we have to remember in the case of Putin, but we can go through all three of those. Putin right now is for more than a year conducting a war in which he's killed.
So that was a year ago, like I said. Now, this morning, on the Squawk Box on CNBC, oh, NBC, just because they're excoriating him on MSNBC, you're still doing interviews over on conservative NBC. Yeah, in that clip, Ralphs, I caught it too. Sniff, sniff, sniff. Yeah, smart. So smart. So really smart. Well, now the game's on. The game's afoot. This was this morning.
Stark policy differences, obviously, Mr. President, but one thing that I think that at least the perception is that there's not a whole lot of difference between what you think we should do with entitlements or non-discretionary spending and what President Biden is proposing. It's almost the third rail of politics, and we've got a $34 trillion total debt built up, and very little we can do in terms of cutting spending. Discretionary is not going to help. Have you changed your outlook on how to handle entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President? It seems like something has to be done, or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements, tremendous bad management of entitlements. There's tremendous amounts of things and numbers of things you can do. So I don't, you know, necessarily agree with the statement.
Because first of all, there's the fawning, Mr. President. Right. As if he still is. He isn't. And I love this business, this bullshit about bad management of entitlements. Social Security and Medicare are administered probably better than any other governmental agencies in the federal government. And even when compared with private entities, Social Security's administrative costs are microscopic compared to those of a for-profit hedge fund or 501c3, or what am I saying? A hedge fund or a 401k or anything like that. The Biden team pounced on the clip and said, not on my watch. When they reached out to, when NBC News reached out to a spokescreep for Nitwit Nero, the spokescreep said, I was only talking about cutting waste and fraud. Forgetting his use of the word.
Also.
So that brings back to, brings us back to the whack-a-mole response that was in the first place, but that's not where it, neither where it began nor where it ended. Also on Squawk Box, because, well, you know, he's just an open sewer left to pour out into the civic street. And so today they also asked him about banning TikTok. because the maggots were losing their shit about banning TikTok. And the answer he gave was, at best, incoherent. In the New York Times coverage, they said, in a CNBC interview, Mr. Trump said that he still considered the social media app a national security threat, but that banning it would make young people go crazy. And then he said, if you ban TikTok, it helps out Facebook, which is an enemy of the people. And then he said that Facebook is as beholden to China as is TikTok, the only difference being that TikTok is owned by China. Then there's the fact that he actually tried to ban TikTok when he was in office. And then, well, cherchez l'argent. The New York Times article makes reference to a billionaire by the name of Jeff Yass, Y-A-S-S. And he's a real billionaire. Not a trumped-up billionaire like Julius Geezer. Going back to his bond, Brother Deacon Asa says, did I just hear you say the Chubb Corporation is behind the bond? Isn't his Chubb what got him into trouble in the first place? See, Brother Deacon Asa, Darlene in Connecticut, me right here. Sometimes, you know, what are you supposed to do when the ball is just hanging above the rim except run through and jam it through the hoop? So anyway, back to Jeff Yass, the real live billionaire. He's got a big holding in the American version of TikTok. The New York Times said Mr. Yass, who's previously been a harsh critic of Mr. Trump's, appears to have had his own change of heart. An official at a pro-Trump super PAC declined to say whether Mr. Yass had donated money to the outside group, but a person close to the campaign said the Trump team expected a significant donation from Mr. Yass to one of the outside groups backing the former president. We are watching him fall to pieces in real time. And then, as George and Korsgold pointed out, by the way, we are on our way. Where has this program gone? We're about to enter the third hour of the program. I have a note from Reverbo, the human man. You don't believe that Donald, going back to Wharton, I don't mean he's going back to Wharton, never mind. Reverbo says, you don't believe that Donald woke up to attend any class at the Wharton School of Economics, do you? That's like thinking that George Jr. wrote a single essay at Yale. Never happened. It's all about the Ivy League connections and legacy money. Intelligence has nothing to do with it. In point of fact, you mentioned legacies, Reverbo. The Commonwealth of Virginia and the University of Virginia have decided that they're not going to do legacy admits anymore. Other states have done similarly, right there where you are, Reverbo, in Colorado. The University of Colorado system and universities in Colorado said they're not going to do legacies anymore. Meanwhile, Brown, in Rogues Island, my first college Latin professor was a proud graduate of Brown, and he was really good. Always had a lot of respect for that institution. But it turns out, Brown says, no, we're going to keep doing legacy admissions, and you know we're going to set up a blue ribbon panel to study what the effects of legacies are, and we expect to get several checks that will convince us that the effect of legacies are really, really good. But George and Korsgold mentioned that there was an interview with Caitlin Collins on CNN with Brian Butler. he is a witness in the classified documents case. And the interview came out today. And there's a lot in there.
At Mar-a-Lago, after they had just performed a search of that storage room looking for classified documents, which we now know, based on the indictment, of course, that Evan Corcoran, Trump's attorney who was looking through those documents, Walt Nauta and others had moved many boxes out of that room. Now, Brian Butler, who is known and referenced six times as Trump employee number five in the superseding indictment, was asked to help Walt Nauta, who is Trump's body man turned co-defendant, load those documents onto the plane. Here's what he told us about that moment.
And then what happened is Walt left before me, and he never goes directly to the plane. He's either in the motorcade or when he goes there with the boss, which the former president. And I remember telling him he left the club with...
I want to just point out one thing. This guy's a witness against Nitwit Nero, but he was also part of his team, and so as he's sitting there interviewing with Caitlin Collins, all these MAGA loco maggots wind up looking the same to me. This guy's sitting there in a Trump blue, solid blue suit with a red tie that is way too long and is hanging out below the buttoned suit jacket of the suit, and just, you know, man spreading from Maine to Spain. Just an observation, just theater of the mind, y'all.
I didn't know what he had in his vehicle, but he waited for me at a nearby business, and I told him I would tell him when I was leaving Mar-a-Lago. So I left Mar-a-Lago. I texted him, hey, I'm on my way. He followed me. He pulled out and got behind me. We got to the airport. I ended up loading all the luggage I had, and he had a bunch of boxes.
You noticed that he had boxes.
Oh, yeah. They were the boxes that were in the indictment, the white banker's boxes. That's what I remember loading.
And did you have any time, any idea at the time that there was potentially U.S. national security secrets in those boxes?
No clue. No, I had no clue. I mean, we were just taking them out of the Escalade, piling them up. I remember they were all stacked on top of each other, and then we're lifting them up to the pilots.
I was only following orders. I knew nothing.
How many boxes was it?
You know, they asked me in the interview, and I believe it was 10 to 15 is what I remember.
The investigators.
Correct.
And when you look back on that now, what do you...
Well, I had no clue until probably the end of June. There's a few different things that happened that kind of opened my eyes to, you know, something's going on here.
So you get that unusual request. Did you ever think to yourself, why were there so many boxes at Mar-a-Lago?
I'm just thinking, the former president, he has a lot of stuff he likes to lug around with him. I never would have thought it was anything like what we see now.
Classified documents.
Yeah, it was just it was 15 boxes of his favorite whoobies.
Jake, it is just a remarkable moment. Caitlin Pollens and I have been reporting on this story along with the rest of our team, but reporting on this story for so long. And in this moment, it is so remarkable to hear from someone who has not spoken publicly before, but clearly just by his proximity and his longstanding ties at the former president's club was able to provide such valuable information to investigators about what was happening here while he himself, Jake, you know, was still piecing this all together behind the scenes.
And Caitlin Paul.
So this is the kind of thing, if Aileen Cannon ever lets this thing go to trial, well, we will, that'll get repeated on the stand. I know we're frustrated. I know we've got this sick feeling in the pit of our stomachs that Nitwit Nero really is Rollo Tomasi, the man who always gets away with it. But remember the end of L.A. Confidential. When when one of the characters says, "You're Rollo Tomasi." Well, Rollo Tomasi doesn't always get away with it. In fact, he dies in a hail of gunfire, but that's just in the movie. You cut her to look like Veronica Lake. Yeah. Oh, thank you, Kevin, up in Massachusetts. Thank you so much. We are no longer a goose egg for this Moran Monday. We have $5 to go on Ralph's Jimmy Kimmel challenge. Aren't you up past your jail time? So $5 more and we're done with Thursday, and we're working on Friday. And that'll take Friday down to only... No, we're done with Wednesday, and we can work on Thursday. Sorry, I get lost. We will be down, if we get $5 more, we will be down to $8.55 to go to get caught up this evening. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much. Facebook and any of the people, Flavio says, I'm glad I'm on Facebook. At least the people on Facebook are older and have probably read Ibsen. Oh, Flavio. You have... Really? That's your standard? You really... you really have that high an opinion of most of the people? No, you didn't even say most. At least the people on Facebook are older and have probably read Ibsen. I mean, I'm on Facebook. I've read Ibsen. Hell, I've performed Ibsen. But I really do feel like an outlier in both instances. I think you'd have a lot better statistical chance if you said something like, at least the people on Facebook are older and have probably read Pogo or Peanuts. I mean, I wouldn't even be so bold as to say at least the people on Facebook are older and have probably read Louis Grizzard. I am a member of Lauren Isley Society. That's pretty esoteric. That's a group on Facebook. Flavio, if you've never read Lauren Isley, I cannot recommend it enough. In fact, a good place to start is a collection of Lauren Isley's essays called The Night Country. And curiously enough, he was the curator or the director or something like that of, because we were talking about Wharton, he was the curator of the Museum of Natural History at the University of Pennsylvania, also home to the Wharton School of Economics. Yes, Reverbo, let's. Let's cross Brown off the list. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go back and get my second bachelor's degree. It would be so nice. Go and get a bachelor's in classics. Finally get my Greek. Maybe my Aramaic. See what you started, Flavio? Here's Emilio. I have not read Ibsen, but I have seen Benson. Does that count for something? Oh, it counts for something, Emilio. Something. Oh, by the way, we are 7 minutes into the third hour of the program and brand new broadcast week. And rumor has it, I can't confirm it. Rumor has it this is a conversation radio program. At present, I'm doing all the conversing with occasional contributions via email. I mean, intellectual contributions. Thank you, Kevin, for the financial one. But if there's something you'd like to talk about, feel free to chime in The stress line is 844-843-4676. And the goddess of irony is a good goddess, and I no sooner said the number than somebody's on the line. And let's find out who that might be. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Todd!
Roxanne.
You've been gone a little bit.
Really?
I mean, didn't hear from you last week. I keep notes.
It might have been. I'm losing track of time. I mean, time is moving so fast now. I can't keep up.
I know. And he ain't going to make it.
If it
is moving fast for Todd in South Carolina, South Carolina, Stan, and it is running at a blurry, pace in front of mine own eyes, imagine what it is for him. We can't keep up. He can't keep up.
You said a whole, that's the whole program, right? What you just said. I mean, it's two components to that.
That's so kind.
Two obvious ones. No, seriously, like, cause you know, you're probably like me, you're inquisitive. If you ask everyone that I know that I'm, you know, we can have a comfortable conversation with agrees that time is actually, if it's not, it sure does feel like it's like a week is nothing now. It ain't shit.
Oh, I think every day now proves the Einstein's theory of relativity. Time speeds up, time slows down.
You see, this I would like, you know what, I'm going to be honest, that I would love for you to have a program just like you dissected, you know, the 25th Amendment, Tony or Emmy Award winning. You know, this time-space thing, if you think about it, it really, you have to think, you have to like open your mind. But think about it like, this is why it's intriguing to many people, because some people never get it. They don't get it. They're like, oh, whatever, fuck.
I can't open my mind. I can't open my mind, Todd. If I open my mind, like bats and spiders and squirrels fly out.
You're right, because your dreams would like spill over into everybody else's like personal.
You want to know how bad it is? You want to know how bad it is? I'll tell you how bad it is. My dreams aren't just like mind movies. They have soundtracks. The last one I remember, and I have no idea why, the soundtrack included the horn section bridge from, and I'm so ashamed to say this, Billy Joel's Only the Good Die Young. You know, the sax solo, you know, the brass. And I wake up from that shit and I go, what the fuck is my brain doing to me?
Did you feel like you were on stage? Because that's a big...
I was actually... I was actually in the dream. I was driving the Mazda that Ferg put into a ditch and has been long since gone.
Oh, no.
I love that car. Big old whopping six-cylinder engine. Of course, I'm so old, I remember when a six-cylinder engine was kind of middling, and you really weren't trying if you didn't have eight.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just tangent queened you. I apologize.
No, it's a good, you know, it's all right. Because now I'm thinking about, a Mazda, you know, I've never driven a six-cylinder Mazda. But they, you know, the Mazda 3, they make some, you know, Mazda's nice. So many cars. But the time and space, because, excuse me. Ooh, I got some candy stuck in my mouth. Time and space. Think about it like this. It takes time to survey the space. That's why they're interconnected. Because by the time you survey the space, time has elapsed and that space has changed.
Yes.
So this is why infinity is infinity. Maybe. You know, and then we get into quantum mechanics and string theory and all that kind of stuff.
Heisenberg's uncertainty principles, Schrodinger's cat, all of that fun shit.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Are we going to wind up with are we going to wind up with Schrodinger's Trump?
Well, fractals of Trump.
Mushroom cat Trump. We have to do something. Anytime. Oh, I'm glad I brought that up. Tangent. Maybe we hadn't talked. Maybe it has been. I've had this time. You know, when you get older, there's so many responsibilities and shit happens. Okay. But, I did hear, and I want to talk about if I were Biden's, what's his face? Who uses his powers for evil? Oh God, the pollster. He's a really good way to talk, but he uses his powers.
Luntz?
Yes, Frank Luntz. Yes, yes.
He's a shitbird, but you know,
he is. Personally, but he's very good at what he does. But he uses his powers for evil. But please remind me, because I think I have something I need them to use. And if anybody can listen and funnel it up, I think it's $1 million thing. And now I forgot what I was going to talk about before, so maybe
that's okay. We'll find our way back. I got a couple of things I got to do. You be thinking for a second. Let's see.
Okay.
Billable Rick called me out and said, doesn't Emilio's comment about seeing Benson as opposed to reading Ibsen qualify for a cowbell? Don't ask me, Billable. That's your job.
That was a cowbell. No, that was a cowbell.
Okay.
Don't
ask questions. Give orders, Billable. You're the director of cowbellery. So that's Emilio's cowbell. Tom and Sunny San Rafael said, the people on Facebook are older and at least some of them can read. Now, Tom, we got something we can work with there. That is an achievable goal as opposed to, and have read Ibsen, which makes me think we need to cue up Jim Nabors singing The Impossible Dream from Man of La Mancha. Flavio says, Lauren Isley, I've read him a long time ago, but I got more into Buckminster Fuller. Oh, well, I was turned on to Lauren Isley by some archaeologists when that was my jam, and it just took my mind and ran away. And since we're naming it, I can't even remember the author, but I remember an essay called Ant Fugue from a book called Gödel, Escher, Bach. And I remember Ant Fugue particularly because it was one of those things whose ideas were so dense that you literally had to read the clauses of sentences, not even just read the whole, just read the clause to try to just wring more meaning out of it. Maybe tonight's list is things we cannot expect people on Facebook who, even though they are older, to have read. Buckminster Fuller, Gödel, Escher, Bach. Some have obviously read Lauren Isley and, of course, Ibsen. And if we're gonna go to Ibsen, what does that say about George Bernard Shaw?
Now, you see, this is what I'm talking about, a professional self and a personal self. Many of those people that you listed, according to a lot of primary sources, were probably folks that you might not like too much, like one-on-one or out. But their contributions were, you know, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like me mentioning Schrodinger's Trump. There's Trump.
Right.
There's Trump, and he's in a box. And at the same time, he's both alive and not alive. And for as long as you don't open the box, you don't know which one obtains. But it's only,
don't open the box.
Right. So, you know, put him in prison. And in this case, prison is serving as the box in Schrodinger's theory or theorem. And don't open it again.
Don't. What else do you need to understand about them? See, now you get me off on another. I got to write down. Yeah.
Just light a net. Just light a Newport and run with it, Todd.
I mean, I feel like we hadn't caught up. But yeah, you know.
I'm sorry. That was horrible, and I'm going to hate myself for 5 or 10 more seconds for that quip. I apologize.
Well, first of all, you know, there is no more coincidence between someone listening to your program and using, you know, what gets talked about, and it's funneling up. And I don't want to get any more specific because I think it's a good thing. But it's so obvious now; it's not even funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's a good thing. You already know that, though. It's just uncanny now. I was like, oh.
Well, okay.
Yeah, we covered that.
So quit it. This is what happens when you don't call for a week, damn it. So I was talking about the weird-ass dream and the Billy Joel. I had another one a couple of days ago because, you know, I've gigged on MSNBC. I've been there a couple of times. And
right.
I had a dream the other day where me and Mika were just sitting around rapping and Joe was looking at us like a calf looking at a new gate. I don't know. And I don't remember the topics, the subjects, nothing, except I think I looked at Joe and I said, you know, we're about the same age. We both went to the capstone. How did we turn out so differently?
Was he marveling at the gift of gab and you guys just clicking? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, we wouldn't let him get a word in edgewise.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, he admits he's loquacious, and you know, we had a lot to say. But I mean, he's been. Listen, he has. I am so proud of him. I really am. That's the wrong term too. Proud, that's the wrong term.
Yes, Mika. For all these long years, Mika has pumped the water into his hand and spelled water, and he's finally saying water instead of lasagna. I'm absolutely proud of him.
Yeah. Yes, but I mean, over since October 7th, he's come around.
Absolutely.
He said illegal settlement. And I'm going to tell you something because I keep track of shit. That's the only time I've heard that on any mainstream broadcast media.
Well, you know, I touched on
the
this.
The way it's supposed to be talked about.
I touched on this earlier, Todd. Do you realize we wouldn't have this genocidal impulse in Israel, this urge toward full on fascism, if it weren't for the illegal settlements? The power base of the weirdos, the power base of Beelzebub Smotrich and what's his fuck Ben Gavir, comes from the bloody minded freaks in the illegal settlements. Those are the Israel Uber Allahs types.
That's where I think my roommate came from. Because like I was saying, when I look back, the only pictures he had, it was nothing to do. And all these things were happening at the same time. In terms of like small industry, like a little commune hippie type things, vegetable growing. But I think he was from Sderot because he was all military all the time. And he was a kid. And there was something different. But even my mom said something to me one day. She's like, I'm not going to say his name. She's like, something's. And he looked old. You know, I could tell. You could tell he had already killed people. I could tell. And he didn't know shit about women. at all, period. It was just like he knew everything about guns and defense. And of course, he was Orthodox. So he always wore black shoes, but he even wore boots in the gym. And like we're like, you cannot. We just had this resurfaced. The school did. You can't wear combat boots here. And that's my roommate, you know. So, but, you know, at the time, just like Joe and actually Michael Steele is insane, you see.
I was getting ready to go to the doctor this morning, and there was Richard Haass, and they were talking about his latest article, trying to get Israel to embrace sanity because now they're just in a murderous frenzy.
That's the thing. I mean, we understand that they're hurt, but. We don't live in a vacuum, and just as we predicted, we've got American casualties, we've got American hostages. All this is doing is pissing off the diaspora. They made their point, you cannot kill Hamas. It's an idea. It's like saying we're going to do away with the Klan. I mean, that's okay. You can say that.
You know, Psycho Bibi recently announced that in the women and children slaughtered, there were 13,000 terrorists.
No, Palestinian.
No, he said terrorists.
I know that, but what I'm saying is that the whole thing is messed up because they're acting like now they're acting just like the people that they claim to hate and is trying to kill them, which they are. But they don't even see what they're doing. Long and finally, everybody's catching up. Like, oh, wait a minute, they might be cultivating a whole other crop of terrorists. Duh. What do you think? What do you fucking think? That's all those people can think about. And I'm actually, when I look at BBC and Al Jazeera and stuff, I am really astounded at how orderly those folks are when the food does come. I mean, there was a skirmish, but you look at what happens here when there's a disaster. Those people are lining up, the little kids that go in, get their food, they go to the
Jesus,
left.
Oh, Jesus, look at the United States when we ran out of toilet paper, for fuck's sake.
I know old ladies hitting each other in the head. It's like Macy's at a Christmas sale.
God damn you, don't squeeze my Charmin. This is my Charmin. I got one roll, and I got to make it last a month.
Oh, man.
Public restrooms. Public restrooms have stainless steel thingamajigs that you got to have a key to get into to change the TP in America. And they're worried about crime at the southern border. Fuck them.
Cowbell.
Oh, why, thank you.
Yeah. You can't, well, yeah, the TP thing is serious. Wow. I did remember a couple of things, though. I caught bits and pieces of the program here and there. And it was weird because, like, both times.
Oh, it's always weird.
Well, it was Cynthia because I remember last time we talked, it was Cynthia and she was supposed to be getting her grill, you know, her
acorn, yeah.
Her acorn. And she got it and you were talking about burning it in. And it was either the program before that or prior or after. It might have been prior, but you guys were talking about the cabbage, and I'm like, oh, and I had to tune out for a minute, but I was thinking about this like a wedge of cabbage, you know, when you spray it with oil, and you got to put it on the grill when it still has those pieces of meat, and saw all those burnt pieces of meat, and it just steams up.
Or you just make a little ring of cabbage wedges around your brisket.
Oh, was that? Yeah, that's always an option. Oh, then you have something to eat along the way.
Yeah, and by the way, and see, that's what you missed last week. Cynthia and I did. We had the Horn's first ever bi-coastal burn-in.
Oh.
We burned our new acorns in on the same day.
Okay, was that the day with the bratwurst?
No, I mean, no, she did bangers. She did bangers on the day of the burning.
Bangers. Because I'm going to tell you, we were on the same wavelength.
That's That's British for bratwurst. They try not to use German too much there in the royal family because it reminds people that, you know, they're not really English.
Well, it was quite interesting because I started thinking about, like, yeah, the kraut. You know, like, you know, in Philadelphia, you get good German kraut. I mean, that's...
And that reminds me. I was trying to remember the other day because I was going to recommend it to Cynthia. I was trying to remember the name of that artisanal kraut out of Wisconsin. And it's Cynthia, if you're out there, it's Saverne, Sauverne, and it's wonderful. And I just saw, I've discovered this Cleveland, it's called Cleveland Kitchen, the Cleveland Kimchi Company, the Cleveland Kraut Company. Comes in a Ziploc bag. It's not in a jar. The kimchi is amazing. And they've got a, what is it? They've got a garlic and onion kraut that would peel paint off the wall. And then they've got traditional caraway.
See, I heard you describing the different flavors that day, and that was like, it just got, I started zoning out, because I was like, oh, yeah. I said, because, you know, when you go to a good German restaurant, like, they have beer, obviously, but then you can get a flight of mustards, too. And then I was thinking about what kind of mustard. I was like, you know what, I need a courgette. Probably going to have what Cynthia just described. It. We need a courgette of mustard. And then she said Dusseldorf, and I was like, yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about. You know, because once in a while you just have to dip, you know, dip the meat into some mustard, just because you have to.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, you know, I'm one of those people who think that mustard is a snack by itself. I mean, I can't help it. And you get to, and you get that good German zest in a toothpaste tube, and you just right out on your index finger, and it's wonderful.
That's what I'm talking about. Like the wasabi in the tube,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Come on,
brown. Yeah, no. Dark beer based mustard, sweet hot mustard, that maille French Dijon. I mean, it's the Dijon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh no, I get all worked up.
I'm gonna have to have some of that. So yeah, back to the mentally ill fascist, I guess. Yeah, you know, and it's funny because they're finally coming around. Yeah, he's not going to make it. He's just not. And it got me thinking. I remember I mentioned this some years ago, but it really makes sense now. And think about this. It's like if I could draw, I'd draw a cartoon. We're all familiar with the witches out like in the Salem woods, and they have this cast iron cauldron and it's bubbling and they have a stick, you know, and they're stirring it. Well, it seems to me he wears one of those around his waist and it's just bubbling and spitting out toxic gas and all this stuff. And it's like his pants and they're, you know, he has suspenders that hold it up. And what that is, that's his, he is a walking cauldron of pathology. Because it's not just that he's mentally ill. We already know that. I mean, Dr. Bandy Lee, I mean, that's a given. I mean, I just have a degree, but it's already out there. But it's other, it's a lot. It's more to it than that. He is just toxic. He does not know when to shut the fuck up. He cannot help it. And I predict he's going to strangle someone in the courtroom. Because I've been studying
No, wait a minute. This deserves some ceremony because you're adding to the pot. We've already got the plaid blanket and the oatmeal drool and the bib.
Yes.
And we've got the general statement of he's not going to make it. And somewhere along the way, we've mentioned the idea that he might bite the head off a live chicken somewhere along the way. But now you're saying he's gonna strangle somebody in the courtroom. Are you committing to that?
Oh.
Todd, are you committing to that?
I'm committing to it.
Okay.
I'm committing to it. And I will give you the rationale behind it. We all know he's prone to lose control. And when he was in the car with the Secret Service, And they were, he wanted to go back to the White House. He wanted to go somewhere where they were like, no, you cannot do this. And witnesses, everybody. And it took them a long time. They didn't want, the Secret Service didn't want to tell on him. And Cassidy Hutchinson didn't want to tell on him at first. But it all came out in the depositions. Even with his freakishly small hands, you know, evil attempt, because he can't control himself.
His freakishly small hands with his weird stubby fingers.
And his mushroom cap. I'd be pissed off, too, if I had a dick that small.
Damn it, Todd. you just trashed dinner in the Mountain Daylight time zone, and God knows billable Rick's snack is in jeopardy, and we've already got on the wrong side of Matt.
Matt, what happened to Matt in San Francisco?
Yeah, bi-coastal bangers, please, Roxanne. I don't want a sudden AstroTurf organization fighting against the destruction of America from bi-coastal bangers.
Oh, sounds like a lot of ruckus.
and so we're working now on bi-coastal, Cynthia has decided that ribs are going to be her first attempt, so I figure we're going to do some bi-coastal ribs.
Wow, she's going off there. Whoa,
mine have been sitting in the fridge all rubbed and ready. You know, there's just no way of getting around, because whatever I say is going to be trouble now. My ribs are sitting in the fridge all rubbed and ready to go.
Your emergency pet.
And so it was supposed to happen this weekend. I was committed to it. They were ready to roll on Friday. And then Saturday was probably one of the grimmest, nastiest, vilest days I've seen in ages.
I meant to call you. The torrential rain. Did it help? Because it was bad. Oh, we got hit. Everybody got hit.
Oh, it was torrential rain and 30-mile-an-hour sideways winds out of the northwest. And the ambient temperature.
You're talking about the grill. You are all set to grill.
Oh, you go to blazes, you. I was all ready to go, and I got hit by a sudden onset seasonal affective disorder, because we'd had some decent weather before that, and I was like, okay. And it's,
you were feeling all good, and here come the clouds and the rain, and you couldn't grill. You're like, damn,
I swear to God, the deck was about six inches over my head. I mean, it was like fog that was made of nothing but rain. And it wasn't any misty shit either. This was what's called a Scotch mist, and, you know, a dense, soaking, incessant rain blown by 30-mile-an-hour winds out of the northwest. I mean, it was rattling and banging around the eaves. And I was so bummed out. Oh, it was terrible. And I'm just sitting there watching those ribs going, well, you know, whenever I can. So today was bright and sunny, but, of course, had to go to the doctor. I had to run around Beckley, come home, do the program. But that's going to happen, and you know, Cynthia kindly provided me with a sous vide machine, which I've tried a couple of times to great success. But now I've got this Sauerbraten marinating in the fridge, because it has to go for a long time, and you turn it every day. It's a bottom round roast. It's a tough cut, but it won't be by the time I'm done with it, because I got to thinking, instead of roasting that in the oven, what if I sous vide the Sauerbraten once it's done? You know, pat it dry and everything. Get it all snugged up. And what if I sous vide that and then pull it out and reverse sear it at the very end and then make that beautiful sweet and sour pan gravy?
Oh, it would be all tender then.
And do some rotkohl for it, and maybe some spätzle, and you say, you know, sing the Panzerlied, and, you know, whatever.
You're making me hungry. Maybe I feel like schnitzel now. I don't know why.
Okay, we have our answer for the weather this weekend. Matt with his second consecutive cowbell rain. That was God punishing you for rubbing on your ribs. Fallopians 25. Oh, wait. Fallopians 25. Rain will befall those that try to rub one out. Damn. That's a two cowbell.
Oh, Fallopian. Rub it out. Yeah. Is it wrapped in saran wrap? You know, whatever you want to call it. Plastic wrap.
Well, the ribs are. But the Sauerbraten is in a Rubbermaid container submerged in the marinade.
See, the latter, I'm thinking, the reason I said schnitzel, I'm thinking like you know, batter it down, tenderize it, and then do the process.
I don't think I can sous vide it with the batter on.
No, I mean when I meant like with a mallet batter that be like
beat it to death.
Yeah, you know, like schnitzel.
You mean go all Trump on it?
Yeah.
And by the way, Christopher in the Great Northwest wants to know. You said he's going to choke somebody in court, Christopher. Choking the chicken or the clerk? Okay, Todd, put it out in the universe. Todd, put it out in the universe. That means it goes right up to the, up on the board at Caesars. Please give me the latest odds on when Nitwit Nero finally strangles someone. When? Which courtroom? Who will it be? Watch your ass, watch your ass, Rusty the bailiff.
I just see it coming. I can't. Who can tell? It depends on the mood.
You don't get the particulars. That's the whole prophecy thing.
But I'm pretty accurate.
I
got a pretty good record.
From Ken up in Erie, subject Todd, message body, walking cauldron, cowbell. Walking cauldron. Oh, and I had a note from Theo a minute ago, inspired by Lauren Isley, because I started something. Hey, Theo. My late friend and occasional mentor, Susie McKee Sharness, tumbled to the concept of geologic time via Isley's writings and conceived and wrote the groundbreaking fantasy novel, The Vampire Tapestry. They never met, but both were astonishingly original thinkers, and each left a rich legacy of ideas. By the way, Jude wrote in and says, hey, the space has changed.
Hello.
The space has changed always. A reminder of the need to focus on the moment at hand as it is all we have to discern its importance. Hello, Todd, and yes, Robin, you always. Coming back home to the horn and the timing. There are no accidents, Jude. There are no accidents.
Well,
Ralphs wants to know, so Todd, will Donnie attempt to This sounds viable. Will Donnie attempt to strangle Alina Havana Havana Havana?
That is a distinct possibility.
Or maybe it'll be in Georgia and he'll try to strangle Stephen Sadow.
Well, it's going to be whoever is in front of him when, he just hits that point. Because right now, you see, the money is hitting him. He's going broke fast. And who's giving him money? There's a lot of stuff going on. Why is he getting intelligence secrets now? See, this is a big problem. We're in a big pickle here. And that was the other reason, you know, Joe has done a good job, Josephette, of talking about those stolen secrets. Because, I mean, we saw a whole lot of things right in front of us. What about what we don't know about? And the retooling.
Again, Mr. Chubb, okay? The guy who signed his $91.6 million bond, okay? That money's not coming back. And that guy cannot be running an outfit that big and think that he ever has a chance of getting the money back after he loses the appeal.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's just, it's coming, right. So it's backed up by someone else.
That's just throwing away money.
And they don't do that or they wouldn't be in business.
Well, it's the federal insurance company and the Chubb Group.
Right.
That's $91.6 million. Nobody but E. Jean Carroll's ever gonna see again.
It just came from nowhere and just
what kind
went.
Of, no, I mean what kind of deal does Chubb have with Trump where he's like, yeah, okay, you know, that was 91.6, you know. It's Elmer Fudd at the end of that one cartoon. I may be a squeaky wabbit, but I ain't going to Alcatraz.
Right. So he's got something that they can use or, you know, something, some information. You know, he knows something.
Or maybe there's going to be a
that
big,
they can use.
A big box of rubles from Mother Russia. But good God, can you imagine how many rubles goes into 91.6 million? All right, I guess we're going to have to do that. Let me get the calculator out.
Wait a minute. We don't have that much time. You and me, come on.
I am not that inept. We'll just use the 91.6 number. It's not the count. Yeah, I don't need the calculator. Wait, I need the.
What is a ruble to a dollar now?
I need dollars to rubles.
I never thought about it lately. It must be like 3 rubles to a dollar. That's what it used to be.
Oh, no. No, no.
What?
90.69 rubles to the dollar.
What? Oh, sorry. I was too loud. Damn.
So that's, let's say, 91.6. No, 6, Roxanne. Okay, if we just take the 91.6 and we don't add all the zeros, $91.6 is 8,307.2 rubles. So I guess it's 8,370 rubles and 20 kopecks.
That's roughly 10 times.
Very nearly. So that would be 900. So that would be 910,600,000 rubles.
Well, excuse me.
They're going to have to send that over on a container ship.
Well, maybe the mentally ill fascists will be closer to it the closer we get to these trials. But, or maybe he just won't be around. Either way. But you see, I don't know how we extricate ourselves from this mess. But one thing, because I see we're running out of time.
Well, Christopher, you know, Oregon just caught on the Chubb Group. Really? Are we sure that's not really a secret dark web room on OnlyFans? See, you bring out the best. Todd, you bring out the best in people.
Well,
I pick up the phone. It's you, and the cowbells start coming down like Saturday's rain here.
Well, I have a fan base because I'm a big guy, if you know what I mean. But and I don't care. It doesn't matter. But listen,
don't make me start calling you big guy. That was Arthur Carlson on WKRP.
Yeah, no. We got enough Carlsons out here. I'm modest.
Oh,
I'm,
shit. I'm, what? I'm, yeah, I'm, we already got too many Carlsons.
We do. But so if I were advising this candidacy here, every time that Biden interacts with the public, he ought to say, because I mean, at this point, he has nothing to lose, only people to gain. He should say, questions work. Maybe two statements and two questions. Say,
Oh, and by the way, did you know the other guy's out on bail in more than one state? How many of you are out on bail right now in more than one place? And I just have a question. If you were running for president, would you be running for president if you were out on bail? Does that make any sense?
It doesn't, but it's one of those, I hate to use the word loopholes. No, it's one of those blind spots. There, that's the word. It's one of those blind spots that the framers of the Constitution had. It was such a blind spot, they never even thought about it. It's like I said last week, they could never imagine that a person who was disabled from ever holding office would think it was okay to run for it.
Well, there's all types of permutations and combinations of this. He could say, I wonder how it feels to be out on bail in numerous states while running for president. I just wonder. Because remember, one felony trial is a full-time motherfucking job.
Oh, here.
One. Now, 92 counts plus these civil actions that he still got to address? No. How can he focus?
Say it, Prophet. Say it.
I mean, that's just...
He ain't gonna make
it. He ain't gonna make it. And this is why people say, Nikki, no. All Nikki Haley has to do is stay sane-ish and stay relevant. And right now she's winning because, remember, she is the last person standing in that side of the arena. She slayed everybody else. And she's learning how to talk shit to the weirdo. So she is actually doing exactly what she should be doing. And this is just an analysis now. I would never vote for her. I don't agree with her, but she is a good politician. She can lie and she's a woman and the best of them. However, I don't think she's mentally ill. There's some things that she will not do, I don't think. There's a lot of time between now. But people are already voting. That's the other problem that we have. Look at the time. But I want to, just impress this upon everyone again.
Wait a minute. Did you just summon Scott's spirit? Remember the clock?
Yeah.
He loved so well.
I did.
With Jesus. Jesus, would you look at the time?
Jesus, Scott, so funny. When his cat died, that was so sad. He was really broken up.
Oh, and Punky?
That was.
And
all, yeah, the
and,
second
and,
cat.
Chirps, yeah. Well, they're all together now.
They're all together now.
Jude has offered up a quote from her favorite poet, Rumi. If I may, Robin, on our community, friend, our closeness is this. Anywhere you put your foot, feel me on the firmness under you. Wow.
Oh, wow. That's pretty powerful.
And as to...
Wow, Jude.
Yeah, I know. As to out on bail running for president, Steve in New York says, this seems to suggest to me that the founders counted on the Electoral College as a more powerful and deliberative body to prevent someone the people elected who was unfit to be president. And now we're using Electoral College counts, and we've already seen to our horror, our chagrin, and our eternal torment, what happens when unprincipled people are, when all we do is say, well, the Electoral College votes. No, Steve's right.
That's a good point, because they do have that power.
it's almost like they, like a jury nullification type of thing.
Well,
right?
What's the phrase for it? Faithless electors?
Right. Well, that's the other thing. In Georgia, we're finding out how bad this is. But these people have been deposed. That's the thing. The Georgia case, if it goes to trial, this is what. And maybe the power elite wants Trump. And I'm just putting this out there, too. And maybe we'll talk about that later, because that's going to take a while to explain. But it's about white supremacy. Because how else can you explain these movements? I just don't understand it. It makes no sense at all, period. You know, so I think really, well, I'll just say it now. Yeah, in a nutshell, you know, the power, because there are a group of people who run everything. That's the truth. I'm not, you know, it's just, you know, C. Wright Mills, power elite, and it's old now, but, you know, never went away. So maybe they think we need to align ourselves with, we had to make a choice, China or Russia. So maybe they figure they look more like us. Because some things are just very simple. They're white folks. So the powers would be like, you know what? We have to make a choice. And if you notice, we're moving away from China in every which way. We're pulling our corporations back. Biden has the CHIPS Act. We're
going to start making sending it all to the United Arab Emirates and Qatar. And Saudi Arabia. I mean, it kind of blew my mind this morning watching the Filthy Morning Habit. They were crowing
about... Oh, they did it already?
They were crowing about having done the 30-50 Women's Forum for International Women's Day and Women's Month. And they went
in
to...
In Saudi!
Well, I think it was Abu Dhabi. Or Dubai.
Okay.
Or Dubai. You know, whatever place it is over there where women have zero rights.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, it's too easy.
Mika's got her own cowbell, and she goes, check cleared.
Yep. She's getting hers.
Did they even remotely consider the optics of that? Or did they do it so that they could prove all, to all the disgusting misogynistic men over there that women aren't really that scary? And that they might survive the very sight of a woman who isn't in a fucking beekeeper suit. I don't know.
You know what? Maybe it was a thumb in the nose, because she definitely is a womanist. I don't know if she's a feminist, but she's definitely a womanist. And which is great.
Do some real good. Come hold your, you know... come hold your Know Your Value rally in somewhere in the United States that actually values women and protects their rights.
Maybe they just wanted to party.
Well, I hear the partying's good over there, but well,
I don't want to go over there, but I have friends that go over there like on a regular, and they like to go out in the desert and dune buggies and. There's all, you know, all types of kind, you know, it's all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, go out in the desert and fuck goats, you know, that kind of thing.
That's a little too. I'm too crotchety right now. I can't. I don't need that.
No, I'm good. But yeah.
You know, this country is big enough. There's so many, like Utah. Utah looks pretty. Yeah, there's places Utah.
They're over there, and the one guy comes back, and they're all laughing, and they're like, I knew this was a setup. And they go, no, you got an ugly one.
Yeah. Well, what's the next? We hadn't talked since the State of the Union. You know, I thought that was, you know, that was real.
That was the best speech he's ever. That was the speech of his life.
You see, he was real. He was serious. He's like, oh, hell no. We can't have this. I'm just excited. You know, the other guy's not going to make it. We'll see what happens. I hope the Georgia case. I don't think they have enough evidence. They didn't make their case. They're so fawny out. You know, what they did was I mean, you have to know when you're black and you're going up, everybody's done it for you. That's, you know, they just got caught up. They got caught up. And that's too bad. But, you know, being isolated like that, lonely, you know, people do things. We're human. But let's all remember, facts and feelings are often incongruent. Just because you feel strongly about something
does
not mean it's
true. He shoots, he scores.
Pardon me?
I said, he shoots, he scores.
Oh.
Say it again. Say it again. Facts are?
Facts and feelings are often incongruent. Just because you feel strongly about something does not mean it's true. If the news makes you feel uncomfortable, maybe it's because your mores and your value system are being assaulted by the truth. And, you know, social sciences shows us some of these phrases are true. You know, don't kill the messenger. Just because someone is giving you the truth, it's not their fault. Don't say they're lying. It's, you know, the truth hurts. And stop gravitating toward things that make you feel good all the time.
What you're doing right here in this moment, and I have a feeling you mean to, is you're eviscerating this entire bullshit of, you know, CRT and DEI is going to destroy America, and we can't make the little white children feel bad about slavery and what their great-grandparents did. Great-great-great-grandparents.
Right.
Or in some cases, their fucking parents.
Right. And this goes for a lot of things. Religion. I mean, we can apply these principles to a lot of things. I think people forget or they never knew. You see, because of my background, you know, I've years of training in how to eliminate bias. And that trains you to pull back from a situation and look at it in a clinical fashion. And look at what's one of the main reasons we're experiencing what we're experiencing now is that people are confused because it's so easy. With, oh my God, these smart TVs and cable, all you have to do is be in your little silo and just hear what makes you feel good all day long. All day long. You can't live on popcorn and candy and soda. You need sustenance. Okay? Just because it makes you feel uncomfortable does not mean it's not true. You know, stop it. And I will give you a perfect example. Washington Journal. Now, you know, I've been with C-SPAN. I got with them right when they started. Like I told you years ago, because one of my friends, their father was blind, so he always had it on. And when it came out, I was like, oh, shit, that's Congress. And, you know, they showed the votes. Like, damn, that's kind of cool.
Let's see how that shit works.
And,
speaking of which, I don't know if you were watching this morning, but this was a moment. Somebody called, and instead of this, you know, because we get a pretty steady diet of, cranky old Uncle MAGA calling in and, you know, babbling about a race of men in the trees, and he's for tough legislation. And thank you, Donald Fagan. But today, a sane person called, and he called in on the Republican line.
Mm-hmm.
And the guest on was Maggot de Maxima Maggot. Andy Biggs of Arizona, you know, one of the assholes who begged for a pardon after backing the insurrection.
That was today?
Wasn't it? Let me look at the dateline.
I missed that.
That was today. And this is...
Okay, I missed that.
And of course, it's a call from Connecticut, so that means the possibility of sanity just by being from Connecticut went up significantly. So this was a little moment. Let's enjoy it.
And abroad.
Let's chat with some callers this morning. Nick's out of Berlin, Connecticut, Republican, up first in this segment. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hang on, before Nick goes ahead, Darlene, if you're there, I got to know, is it in fact Berlin, Connecticut, or is it Berlin? Just asking. Okay, all better. Let's see what Nick's got to say to Andy Biggs.
Up first in this segment, Nick, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, John. Long time, been watching C-SPAN since day one. This is my very first phone call to the network. I just wanted to speak with Mr. Biggs about the concept of being a Republican. I've lived in 5 states in the past 15 years, owned homes in each of these states. I've traveled extensively across this country in the past few years.
God, you can just hear the waves of sanity coming off of him, can't you? I mean, what the? And it's so funny. You said, I've been there since the beginning. And here's what's the first thing the guy says, you know?
I've got to say, the state of this union is tremendous. We're strong. We're doing well. Of course, we have our problems, as other folks do. But I just think overall, as a country, we're doing extremely well. And the divisiveness that I've seen from my party in the past 40 years has got me kind of puzzled. I just registered as a Republican 2 months ago for the fifth time, Mr. Biggs. And I'm just going to leave you with this comment, and that is that I register as a Republican because I'm a conservative, and I'm going to vote for Joe Biden because I'm a Christian. Thank you for listening.
Mr. Biggs.
Well, I think that's really interesting. He probably should re-register as a Democrat. I think if you're not voting for Donald Trump because you think he's not a Christian or not a moral man, I'm not going to say look at Joe Biden. I would just say we should all look at ourselves and see.
Freely? Really, Andy? We should all look at ourselves? I bet that dude has sheets over every mirror in his house. Oh, and by the way, 3 cheers and a tiger for me, Todd. I have won. Darlene said what you said. It's Berlin, Connecticut. Yay.
Berlin. How did you know?
Because I'm a hillbilly. I have yet to see a Berlin or a Berlin anywhere. It's always Berlin. I even knew people named Berlin. Okay. It's kind of like Bernard. Okay, in the civilized world, the name is Bernard, Saint Bernard.
Bernard.
You goddamn right. You take that name and you
goddamn Bernard. I don't call you. Get your hair cut.
Berlin, get your ass over here.
Put that bottle down, son.
Honest to God, Berlin, drinking at 5:30 in the morning is not acceptable. Most people would say you've got a problem, Berlin.
Oh, shit.
It's like Bernard. You know, it crosses the pond and it turns into Bernard. St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana. Guy out the road, I knew, named Bernard.
You know what? After some stuff, dude, all them letters, he just lied again. It don't matter. Berlin, Merlin, 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 Merlin. Oh, God. Smirlin, Merlin.
Oh, by the way,
here is a Berlin.
Hey, you get fan mail. You know, Jude wrote in. And Flavio wrote in, thank Todd for calling in today. I think you just did, Flavio. Flavio says, I miss Todd.
Oh, that's nice.
You don't get to go like over 5 days without a call. I'm sorry. You have a fucking job, Todd.
I didn't know. I did not know.
Oh, quit it. Know. You didn't know. Please. Tell it to the Marines.
I didn't know. I had no idea.
You like me.
No, seriously.
You really like me. Okay, Sally Field.
Oh, God. Don't start with the movies.
I got thanks to send out, too. George and Coarse Gold just finished off the last of Ralph's challenge. And so we are not.
Good.
We are down to 8:05. So we're done with last Thursday's fundraising. And we've got, let's see, like 2:25 to go on Friday. Thank you, George. Thank you. And just adding insult to injury, Darlene in Connecticut, Cowbell Darlene, said, "It's Berlin like Israel." spelled I-Z-R-U-L-L, Israel.
Yo, you know what? You know, you and I both, I'm assuming only because I hear it in your voice. When Mika says Israel, it just breaks me up. And like, damn, she just went deep south.
At this point in time, I expect that the whole Horn Family Community Congregation, that at least the subsection that tunes into my filthy morning habit, when they hear... It's like that thing from It's a Wonderful Life. Every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Every time the entire Horn Family Community Congregation that watches my filthy morning habit, every time they hear Mika say Israel, they know that up on a mountain somewhere in West Bicol, Manchinia, A suspiciously large hillbilly girl is having a conniption.
She said, "The coffee shops are very full this time of year in the Berkshires. However, most of the tourists are in Israel."
Israel. That's why you can actually get a seat in a restaurant in the Berkshires. Everybody's in Israel.
Israel. Yeah, she goes from being... For being in Connecticut and horse country, to Israel. You guys, some great
Berlin, you and Bernard get over there and tell Israel to come on home. Quit throwing rocks at his neighbors.
Yo, somebody, when I used to work at the museum, somebody came in and they said, "Bernard." And I'm looking for Bernard. And I said, "Oh, you mean Bernard?" They said, "Yeah, Bernard." I said, "Oh, okay."
Well, you remember the little old lady in Andy Griffith who would always refer to Barney as Bernard, and then Andy would mock and say, "Yeah, Bernard."
Oh, he hated that. Oh, he hated that. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say anything about Mr. Fife. You know, he was one of the wisest people on this planet. You know, nip it in the bud. That's ancient Greek. You know, that's wise.
Well, what the Emancipation Proclamation was, Ange, is it was a proclamation of emancipation. Here, I'm going to sing a cappella. A cappella, a cappella. Comedic genius, proud son of West Virginia.
No, really?
Yes.
No.
Yes, you can, if you stroll down High Street in my beloved Morgantown, and you go down by the old Metropolitan Theater, please, Jesus, still let them have, there was a pool hall underneath the Met that still had recruiting posters from World War I on the walls.
And I would love that. Are you serious?
God, what, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I was still there. And even though I didn't do it anymore, I sat down there and I got me an ice cold, icy light long neck from the murky waters of the Monongahela.
You know what? I don't dislike Iron City. I really don't. I mean, you know, it's like...
I'm sorry. The regular Iron City and the Yinzers are going to hate me for this. I can bear it. I see light, and God knows I drank enough to float a battleship in college because it was the cheapest beer there was. I see light is not horrible. But to drink an honest-to-God Iron City, I swear the kegs that it's stored in are actually iron and filled with rust.
Jesus.
Because it's Iron City and it tastes like iron. Uh-oh. The Southern's coming out. I just said iron.
Arn. A-R-N. Arn.
Arn.
I mean, and it is what it is.
And I went to a big Catholic wedding in the Berg back in the mid '80s, and the ladies, you raise funds for the honeymoon, and so the ladies would pay $1 for a piece of cake, and the guys would pay $1 for an Impnarn. That is to say, an Iron City beer and a shot of Imperial whiskey.
Yeah, wait a minute. Was this overlooking the Loin District?
Oh, I don't. I got so lost. This was up in the burbs, somewhere between New Kensington and Lower Burrell. The woman that I went with whom I was madly in love. And I don't mean this to sound slurry or anything. She was this beautiful Jewish girl, and this was a huge Catholic wedding. And she said, "What is this shit with putting envelopes full of money in a fucking birdcage and paying $1 for a piece of cake?" And turned to me and said, "Booger, we're going to do that at our wedding. You better fucking believe it. You better convert real quick." I said, "What about you?" She said, I'm half Baptist. Because she was. She was half Jewish and half Baptist.
I'm like, So I got to convert?
Okay. I got to convert? I said, "What about the kids? We're going to have to raise them Catholic." She said, "Nah, you can resign after the honeymoon."
It's not that big of a deal. Don't worry about it.
but then she walked up to one of the groomsmen with her dollar and said, "Fuck that cake, give me the Impnarn." I'm like, "Oh honey, you were made for Pittsburgh."
Oh God,
sorry.
She sounds like she was from New York.
Well, her daddy was. He was from Brooklyn.
She was
raised in Atlanta, but he was from Brooklyn, got drafted into the Air Force, got sent to Alaska, got out of Alaska, said, "I don't ever want to be cold again," moved to Alabama, married a girl from Bibb County, Alabama, good Baptist girl, drop dead beautiful, and was kicking ass as the editor of the Crimson White newspaper at the University of Alabama. And in his senior year, I respected this man deeply. I was terrified of him, but I respected him. In his senior year, he published an expose that outed the dean of men as a sexual predator of men of male students on campus. And they bounced his ass out of the capstone so fast he didn't have time to say roll tide.
They don't want to hear that kind of news there.
And he covered the civil rights struggle for the Montgomery Advertiser, took a photograph, shot up one photograph that came very close to winning him a Pulitzer of one of the legislators trying, literally climbing up and holding on to the official clock behind the speaker's chair to keep the hand from moving.
See, to keep legislation this is not alive. Like BB's crew. Yeah, this is not.
No, it's not.
Yeah. And that's something that's been on my mind. This is not the folks that helped out.
But they bounced his ass out. And then years later, when his oldest daughter was graduating with honors from the University of Alabama Law School, and his younger daughter was graduating with honors from undergrad at the University of Alabama, the University of Alabama offered to confer his degree upon him and acknowledge the wrong that had been done him, and he said, "Never in my life will I accept a degree from this institution." and his morals were impeccable. Wow, that was a digression. I apologize for that.
No, that's interesting. I get it. You know, some things have to be said, right?
Sometimes. I mean, it's like
your whole program.
It's like Mrs. Lohman said at the end of Death of a Salesman. Attention must be paid. Attention must be paid.
Well, I'm so glad I was able to catch up.
Oh, I'm so glad you called. You made my evening. And Jude says, let Todd be present to the insight, openness, humor, and humanity he shares with us. It comes through him, but not fully of him. My best to his dear mother. Delighted hearing tonight, yet the below. Thank you, Jude. You are a dear.
Oh, that's nice. That's beautiful.
And going back to Berlin real quick, Flavio says, even the fucking suburb of Milwaukee, founded by Germans, is, drumroll, New Berlin. No.
That's funny.
There are some kick-ass boots made there.
Really?
Yeah, that's I can't remember the name now, but they'll last two or three lifetimes. If the place is still a going concern, they're literally made to measure to your foot individually.
Oh no.
Yeah, they're serious.
God, you know, you can't beat a good pair of boots. Honest to God, they fit right. I'm wearing a pair of boots right now I have not worn, and I swear to God, I've had these Timberlands since 90. No, I know exactly when. I bought them in 98.
Wow.
And, these are like the big boys. And I'm going to tell you, like, when they were made in America, 100% waterproof.
I finally, this year, in the dead of winter, when I was expecting there'd still be some winter for me to deal with later, found an absolutely breathtakingly beautiful pair of women's boots. They were cute, and they had a pretty little shearling ruff at the top, and they laced up real nice. They fit, and they fit. Oh, Jesus, they fit. And I was like, oh, I got to have these. It's going to get, this is winter. I don't want me cold feet. Can't stand cold, wet feet because these things are insulated and they got insulated and they got Gore-Tex and water doesn't come through and they get great tread.
Yeah.
And I bought them and it snowed and I got to wear them once. Yes, Ralphs, that's it. The Russell moccasin.
What happened?
Ralphs got it. Ralphs lived in Wisconsin for good long while, and she said, yep. And they are apparently still a going concern. The Russell Moccasin Company of Berlin, Wisconsin. And if you do outdoor things and you have the wherewithal, you can't go wrong. Ralph serving as the Horn ad hoc moccasins made in Berlin, Wisconsin research department. I'm sorry. It's been a weird and silly weekend because the end of the week was weird and silly and creepy. I mean, you haven't even hardly said anything about Katie Britt.
Oh, well, I felt like I had all this other stuff. I'm glad. You know what? Since you brought it up.
Did you see the parody that Scarlett Johansson did when she picked up the teacup from Get Out and they cut away?
Away
to that wide-eyed look on Kenan Thompson's face.
Yes, and I want to go back to how you began this. You asked me about it, and I'm going to say this. I think it's a good thing. I think that maybe this disgusting fever is about to break because it was so obvious what. Now I know let me preface this and then qualify what I'm saying. I know I'm not probably the best messenger to say this, but you know, I get around, I have a lot of different types of friends. And this grieving young white mother And it's just like, oh, I was just waiting for her to say, oh, the Negroes are trying to break into my house. I mean, that was the next thing I heard fucking
I wasn't the only one, because I was still waiting for her to say something about segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever.
I swear to God, I think it was
a case of demonic possession, and her entire soul and being was overtaken by the shade of George Wallace.
Yeah. She just, it was too much. I mean, but see, they did. Well, I'm glad it happened.
I'm grateful to the goddess that I didn't have, you know, a Jeroboam of rot gut Mexican gasoline and a swirly straw, because I would have been done.
That, you know, but now I think so. It's a bunch of factors here. And this is Biden is well, our side's going to win. It may not be Biden. Whoever is, you know, on our side is definitely going to win now, because first of all, you know, Trump's not going to make it. Then, people are seeing things what they are now, in a way. And the people who aren't, they're just noisy.
Oh, I got to give you a cowbell for something. And what that's happened? For, I think this fever is about to break.
Yeah.
That line.
Yeah.
We need a little optimism every now and then.
Well, it's too much now. And that young lady, the representative from Alabama.
Oh, no, she's a fucking senator. Hold on.
Oh, what, she's a senator?
Yes, sir.
Holy shit. Oh, fuck.
See, the way she's... Okay, so dig this. Back...
Oh, she's a senator.
Back...
Elvis a rock.
Back when Annette and I traveled in November 2021 to Alabama, the election was fully a year away. And... everywhere we drove through Alabama, and by the way, I should let you know, Annette swears she will never cross the state line of Alabama again for the rest of her life. She just says, she said, that place is creepy.
Oh, I'm glad you brought it up, too, because Joe was talking about Alabama. I swear you heard me talking about Fairhope, because I've been there. But go ahead.
Are you kidding me? I love Fairhope. I love Fairhope.
You've been there?
Fuck yes. It's on the way to the beach.
That's what I'm talking about, Daphne. I stayed in Daphne.
Miss Terry lives in Daphne.
Man, you know what? I was like, damn, these people got it going on. Because, like Mobile City and Daphne and Fairhope, it's like a suburb. You know, it's where you go for the beach. Because I went downtown to Mobile and to a real pool hall where the shooters go. Like, get a table by the hour. Pitchers of beer, pool by the hour.
Like the Met pool hall in Morgantown, yeah.
You know, if you shoot pool, that's like a big deal. You know, but yeah, Fairhope, God Almighty, man, beautiful. Oh, so when he brought that up, he was talking. I know that's not what we're talking about now, but I was like, wow, Fairhope, you know, because I mean, how else do you get there? It's like it's out of the way. You're not going to just end up in Fairhope.
No, I mean, every tourist knows Fairhope, because if they've done their homework before they go, they know to obey the speed limit scrupulously.
I can feel that. It's like where I live. Oh, you better go slower.
It's like if the speed limit is 45, your white ass goes 44 and black folks do 35.
Yep. And as long as you know the rules, there's no rules.
God, I can't believe I'm telling these stories. A long time ago, I sat for the Alabama State Bar, and I passed with flying colors, because of course I did. And sitting for the bar there, I reconnected with a friend I had made at my best friend's wedding in Pennsylvania.
Uh-oh.
somewhere there's a photo of him and me standing with, you know, because I'm a hillbilly and he's from Mississippi, and we're standing with double-barreled shotguns cradled in our arms with the groom in between us. It didn't last. And I was the groom's friend from his undergrad, and he was the groom's friend from his law school days. And it was sweet, and it was fun. And we became very good friends and kept chatting and everything. And we wound up taking the Alabama bar together, and we both just cruised it.
Mm.
And afterwards, we're sitting there over beers, and he's like, and I'm not mocking when I do this. His accent was so thick. He's like, Mr. Robin? I'm like, yeah, mister, fill in the blank. What do you say now we pass, and we didn't have the scores yet, but he knew. What do you say now we pass the bar in Alabama? We just go down here to Baldwin County, set up a DUI practice. We don't do nothing but DUIs during spring break, and we live a life of leisure for the rest of our days. I said, Mr. Fill in the blank, that sounds lovely. And he didn't, and I didn't. But the idea of just living down there within less than an hour of the beach, and going in and pleading out drunk college students, that would have been the practice of that would have been a dream practice.
Somebody's probably doing it.
Oh yeah, I know. There's lots of people doing it. Now it's a saturated market. Back then it was just, you know, a bunch of old white dudes in blue and white striped seersucker suits with bolo ties. Hello, Steve.
You know what's interesting? If for some reason in the South, when they arrest people, they make you stay. You have to stay overnight. You got to wait till the little magistrate trots in whenever you feel like showing up.
Yes, but they do. That's the point. And in the meantime, they go over your car, they go through your car, they go through your wallet, and whatever money you had in there, you ain't got no more.
Well, that's the other part of it, isn't it? And they take your keys. Well, they do that.
It's state-sponsored larceny. And, you know, you got all these little drunk Yankee children coming down from... white drunk Yankee children, you know, coming down from, you know, places where they talk like this, and it's the nearest beach to them on the entire fucking continent. And they come down, they get popped for DUI, and they get everything taken away from them, and they call daddy, and daddy sends more.
Mm.
And you give the more that you get to the DUI lawyer you hire. And then you swear, and then the kids, Daddy, I had no idea. It's not like drinking in Manitowoc. I swear to God, it's not. They're putting something in the booze down here.
And what are the parents going to do? You can't let your kid rot in jail.
No, they're going to send money.
They're going to send pay. And they took my spending game too, Dad.
They're going to send money to the firm of Robin and fill in the blank Esquire. It was not a terrible idea.
Somebody's got to do it. I'm just saying.
But I went back to West Virginia and fell in love, and damn it.
Love.
True love and happiness.
You know, I mean, yeah, we do. That's the facts and feelings. Remember, we don't know what love is. We know it, but what is it? It's not a fact. What is it?
Okay.
You know it.
Here is tonight's literary reference. Since we've moved into love, look up a Carl Sandburg poem called Little White, Little Word, Little White Bird. It'll break you. The year after I won the state championship in poetic interpretation, because that's all I got to look, that's all I got to fall back on now. Yeah. I peaked in high school. Who are we kidding? The year after I won, doing a virulently racist poem, a girl I knew went down and did poetic interp at the state championships and did that poem. And it has stuck with me ever since. Beautiful. Little Word, Little White Bird by Carl Sandburg.
You'll never forget it, will you?
Oh, no. I was supposed to be going to that championship for extemporaneous speaking, but a girl I went to school with had T-boned my ass. And when she T-boned me, she picked my truck up off the ground, threw me into the next lane of traffic, where I got head-on.
Damn.
And when I got head-on, my head got shot, because, you know, seatbelt technology. My head got shot into the windshield, and I had just started wearing glasses, which shattered, and laid me open right above my left eyebrow. And I never gave it much thought until, like, 3.5 years ago when I had to start putting my eyebrows on, so now... And every time I do it, I take that eyebrow pencil and I take it across, and then it gets sucked into that fucking scar.
Mm.
And I'm like, "Well, hi, Martha. How are you?"
Scar tissue.
No, damn. it's like a ditch above my left eyebrow.
It's a divot.
A divot. Yes. Oh, great word.
Well, I have some of those. You know, right. Skin divot. You know, sometimes you take the chunk out and you're lucky it doesn't get infected and it heals over. But you think it's going to fill in. It's not like Wood Putty where you can just spackle it.
And nobody gave a shit. Nobody gave a shit. To the extent anybody gave a shit, that, you know, the doctor looked at me and goes, "That's almost going to be like a Heidelberg scar, son."
You're like, "Oh, thanks.
You can make up stories about that." And the thing is, I spent the next 30 years picking tiny little monomolecular shards of glass out of it. It'd like rise to the surface, and I'd be like, in front of the mirror, and a little piece of glass would come out.
Damn.
And it's literally a ditch over my,
what about the hair?
My left eyebrow.
But you know, sometimes the hair gets in, you know, it will get you in trouble. It gets, you know, because it tries to grow back, and then it's a mess.
Oh, my left eyebrow is a nightmare. I look like Thufir Hawat from the first Dune movie, the original Dune movie. I just shave that shit off now. Shave it off and draw it back on.
Oh, God.
What? This has been... This may be the epicest Robin and Roxanne and Todd conversation of all time. It may be the epicest Roxanne and Todd, Robin and Todd, Bob and Todd conversation of all time. You had what? To, didn't you? You fucking had
I
to.
I had to. Man, I've been holding that shit in. I swear, I've been holding that shit in for like a month. I feel like it took a big shit.
I don't feel great about being compared to that, but I'll take it.
It was. I meant that in the best type. Like, it was a relief. You know, it was like... That's all.
No, you just you had to do it. It was in the moment and it was in the situation. Okay. Wait. Before we go, one thing. I need a research trip. You have a nearby wiggling pig, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I need you to just shoot me an email It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to happen on air. Go to your nearest Wiggling Pig. Wander through. Maybe it's in the barbecue sauce section. Maybe it's in the, you know, artisanal what the fuck section. But I need to know if, because this is important, in South Carolina, can you buy a quart jar of Dreamland barbecue sauce?
Greenland?
No, Dreamland, Dreamland.
Oh, Dreamland. Okay.
There'll be
white?
No. This is barbecue sauce. Oh, this is such barbecue sauce. And on the label, there will be a stylized logo of an old black man with a straight pipe in his mouth, and that's Big Daddy.
Dream the little opium pipe.
No, it is not. If Scott was still alive, he would call in and tell you exactly what kind of pipe that was. I actually met the man once.
Is it a clay pipe or is it a corncob pipe?
It's like a briar. I mean,
briar pipe. Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about a man who had a 300 SD in gold Mercedes-Benz sedan parked behind the joint, and a Rolex Oyster President on his wrist.
Damn, that must be some good sauce.
Oh, it's fabulous. It's the best sauce there is. Yeah, you know, fuck Kansas City.
All right, you said something about the pig is so weird because it's the only store in the world you will go into that has a wall of fat back. When I say wall,
yes, and they will have vacuum sealed, shrink wrapped hog jowl.
And you're like, well, who's buying all this shit? Like, that, it can't be. Like, I cannot tell you the last time I bought it. I might have bought
people
fat back.
People know. I mean, the Piggly Wiggly on Claremont Avenue in Birmingham. I fell in love with that grocery store over the course of 6 weeks. They had a bank of like 16 different local craft brews, and you could cruise up to the bar and get a pint, and their buggies had cup holders.
Damn.
And you could cruise the rest of the store, do all your grocery shopping, and sit there and drink beer in Alabama.
Oh, I'm dead. Oh, that's crazy.
It's the bougiest damn grocery store I've ever been to.
Next year, they'll have a smoking lounge.
And shut up. But you know, you could, for business. You could buy Dreamland sauce there. And they promoted all the local breweries. And they had everything that Konecka makes. Every damn thing Konecka makes. When Konecka would issue a limited release sausage, they'd have it.
Yeah.
They had Konecka bacon, which is second in bacons only to Benton's Bacon of Madison, Tennessee. So,
that was kind of where I was going. Where like they have something that's basic, like base and abundant as fat back. Like I said, a whole wall plus carts.
That's the whole thing. It's not just fat back; it's artisanal fat back. They got fat back from pigs that are raised on acorns. They got fat back from pigs that are raised on hazelnuts. I mean, it's French.
That's the thing, right? It's like wine. Like, we got the regular fat back, then we have, like you said, the artisanal, right? But then they have, it might not be a lot of it, but they have out of the way spices that your other markets might not have.
Oh, yeah. And
so it's really strange.
Dude, they had Japanese sakis that Zen masters in Japan don't even know exist.
And you were probably the only place in town that had that sign.
I know that for a fact. And so,
see, it's weird.
So, Mr. Phelps, here is your assignment if you choose to accept it. Go to your Wiggling Pig and send Roxanne an email and tell her if there's Dreamland sauce by the quart in your pig. Because
I will let you know because
it's important, because that means they're getting it from a Piggly Wiggly distribution point, which means I have a fighting chance of getting it in West Virginia.
Well, I'll let you know. It must be good. You wouldn't be bringing it up.
Because I dropped $15 on what I thought was a quart of Dreamland sauce, and it arrived, and it was a fucking pint. And you know better than I do. You got to be liberal with the mopping.
A pint, that's not enough to do anything with.
Dude.
Sorry.
No, you're right.
What's a pint going to do? Right.
A pint is okay if you've gone somewhere else and gotten like a pound of pulled pork and brought it home.
Yeah. You always need more than if you can't run out of sauce.
Well, and if you're mopping, you got to be sloppy about it.
You got to have extra. It's got to be dripping.
Hold on. Wait a minute. The Purity Patrol has chimed in. Dreamland barbecue sauce has high fructose corn syrup and too much sugar. No, it doesn't, Flavio. It's got high fructose. Oh, it's got high fructose corn syrup in it. But I dare you to compare the grams per 2 tablespoons of carbohydrates to just about any other barbecue sauce there is. Because the rest of that shit is loaded with sugar. You can drink this stuff straight out. You can drink this stuff straight out of a bottle. And I kind of do. It's kind of like a monster.
Flavio, are we going to weigh the sugar delivery system versus the quality of the product? Now, which matters more?
Oh, and the quality is so high.
Right. You know,
and considering the fact that I have eliminated high fructose corn syrup from every other aspect of my diet, I'll sacrifice for Dreamland.
That's right. Well, it's funny you mentioned the pig, because actually this week I was headed over there, because last time I was there they had, you know, the potatoes, the russet potatoes are funny in terms of their pricing now, and they had the best price on the big bag last time I went out, because I had to have potatoes.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I love the fact that I can go to Kroger's, who, by the way, are not going to strike in West Virginia now, yay, or Kentucky or Ohio, yay, because the corporation saw reason and signed a new contract with the union. Good corporation. Good. But you can get these bags of pre-cleaned, pre-washed small potatoes, and they come in blue and red and gold. And you toss those things in like avocado oil and hit them with your favorite herbs and a little salt. Throw them in the oven, bake them, come out, smash them. And those individually smashed potatoes are a perfect little finger food.
When you guys were talking about the mashed potatoes some time ago, that kind of set me off. I had memories.
Annette changed my life. Again.
I was like, that makes all the sense in the world. Like, can you save that water? It's like, yeah, one pot nip, yes. Are you kidding?
It's just like scalding the skin off a tomato.
Yep.
Isn't it? By the way, Lou in PA just checked in and said, Piggly Wiggly doesn't sell Keebler iced oatmeal raisin bars. No, they don't. And no does, and neither does any other store on the planet.
They have a pig in Pennsylvania?
No, they don't have a pig in Pennsylvania. Lou's never been in a pig.
I was about to say, they got
he's just taunting me. Because no matter how much I beg the Keebler Corporation, they will not bring back my iced raisin bars. Because every time I beg them to, Tracy's out there writing back going, I don't want to hear nothing about no fucking raisins.
I know, because she has plenty. She has all she can eat.
Nah, she's a raisinist. She's a grape supremacist.
You people.
Oh, shit, you dropped a you people. Todd, I got to roll, honey. This has been so much fun.
Well, likewise, it was great catching.
Where'd you go?
And I'll see. Well, be safe, and we'll see how things transpire.
We've been doing it for more than 20 years now, haven't we? And you've been doing it for a big part of it.
Oh. Well, that's funny. Well, we'll talk about it soon. I hope.
Okay, so Jude wants you to know that if you would, do let Todd know I wanted to join you in your interchange tonight, held back by only knowing the stress line. Once upon a time, 20 years ago, we had 6 lines. We don't have 6 lines anymore. Anyway, Todd, you have a wonderful evening.
Yeah. Here. You too. And thanks again.
Oh, pleasure. Please. I was so glad that when I pushed the button, it was you. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's it. I think we just made up for some time I lost a couple of weeks ago or something. But anyway, thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to our challenge respondents and challenge makers. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon, Asa, headon.live. Please leave a comment on the podcast if that's how you listen. Like, subscribe. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights, 25 plus years. In the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Get your flu shot. As last weekend proves, we ain't done yet. Wear your mask around the maggots. That should be obvious by now. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. Sunny days are on their way. And if Nitwit Nero approaches you, saying,
I think we can cut the Social Security and the Medicare now.
Avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina. It's all for you. Later.